Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table. We dance whenever we're able. We'll routine to call a scene to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table. Our shows are more mid-able. The many times we give and rhyme that are quite unsingable. We're all so mad in Camelot. We sing from the dire Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
Well, on second thought, let's not go to Camelot.
Ma'am, sorry.
It is a silly place.
What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How do you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
Oh, but you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
Oh, but if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh. Come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway! Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about! Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Hee hee! King Shazir the Turbo! All rise for King Shazir the Turbo and the Knights of the Round Table!
Today is April 10, 2016. I have an article here from the Inland Valley Daily Bulletin. As you can see, this is a commentary piece that is titled, California Broken into Too Many Pieces. Now, I was originally going to do this video several days ago, but things got busy and I'm only doing it now. Since I waited, I have a lot more to discuss in regards to the article. This article is about how there are too many counties in California, there are too many local governments that people can't keep track of, So the solution is to consolidate California into 10 territorial districts, because consolidating power into the hands of the few is always the number one thing to do when you are living under a growing tyranny. You are going to see in this video and other videos exactly how our government would look under this condensed format where fewer people represent the many. So the other day, as many of you know, we were in downtown Los Angeles for the SCAG Regional Council, which is a once-a-month meeting. At this particular meeting, the SCAG Regional Council was voting on the SCAG Regional Transportation Plan, or the RTP. We have been fighting the RTP for the last few months, and this was the final meeting. I want to go into some details of this meeting, as I learned several very interesting things the other day. First and foremost, SCAG literally runs around telling anyone who will listen that their plan is going to cost $500 billion. That's their words, not mine. SCAG, the Southern California Association of Governments, is a regional governance structure that has jurisdiction over 6 counties in Southern California that covers over 18 million people. The SCAG Regional Council, I believe, has 82 members, but on this day, only 52 showed up. Now, you would think that with 52 elected mayors, city council members, and county supervisors gathering in one room to vote on a plan that they admit will cost $500 billion, that will have major impact on over 18 million people, wouldn't you think that every media outlet in the country would be at such an event? That's what I was thinking when I walked in. Nope. None. Zero. There was one guy taking pictures in the room who looked like he worked for SCAG. Tressie and I were the only two people filming this event. SCAG was webcasting from their website, but we were the only two outside individuals filming this meeting. $500 billion being voted on by 52 politicians, and there will not be a single newspaper article or news broadcast about it. We literally have the exclusive on this story, and this is why it is extremely important that you share this, because there is no one else in the world who is going to be covering what happened the other day. So there was zero media. Tressie was told that she can't film. Not to mention the fact that nobody even knows what SCAG is. I would guess that there were probably less than 1,000 people who are aware of what was going on the other day that is going to be affecting 18 million people. So nobody knew about the meeting. There was no media other than us, means that this was a secret meeting. Plain and simple, this was a secret meeting. We also learned that all 191 cities that are in Southern California do not even get a vote. We learned that almost each voting member represents a district, and each district has several cities. 30 people didn't show up, so we're talking some 90 to 100 cities didn't even get a vote on this. That was very shocking. So you have 49 people deciding the future of Southern California, and what is that future, you ask? Well, the future is vehicle mileage tax, or getting taxed and tracked for every mile you drive. What I didn't know before walking into SCAG was the exact funding source for the $500 billion plan. I found out from one of the regional council members that $120 billion of the $500 billion will be coming right out of our cars. That's right. They are going to force you to pay so that it is unaffordable to drive, and you'll be paying to be getting on a bike. Now let me be clear here. This big packet that SCAG voted on is not a law. It's a plan. It's a recommendation. When the state legislature in the future tries to pass some of what is in this plan, they'll be referring to what SCAG did. So that's my rundown of what happened the other day. Once again, please share the videos. We were literally in the belly of the beast. We were as far into enemy territory as you could be. They literally laughed at me during my speech. So continuing on with the article, wherever you live in California, your county probably doesn't fit you. Many counties are too small. 25 of the 58 California counties have populations under 140,000, the population of my hometown, Pasadena. Some counties are too sprawling. It can take 3 hours to get across Riverside and San Bernardino counties. And in the big metropolitan regions where most of us live, counties, supposedly the state's form of regional government, divide our communities instead of uniting them. So as usual, we have to use this fair and equitable communism as an excuse to consolidate the government. The Bay Area is sliced up between 9 counties. The capital region around Sacramento includes 4 counties. Greater Los Angeles is a mashup of 5 counties with no clear geographic divides between them. And so this right here is SCAG, the Southern California Association of Governments. And what they are discussing in this article already exists. What they want to do now is roll it out so that everybody knows about it. And so believe it or not, when you saw the SCAG plan that I showed the picture of, the RTP, it had a big 50 on the cover. That's because SCAG has been around for 50 years and almost nobody knows about it, but they are now going to let everybody know about it, and they're calling it California 2.0. It has become commonplace in California to complain that our state is simply too big and to suggest via ballot initiative, as in Tim Draper's Six California scheme. But creating new states would require congressional approval, an unlikely prospect. Instead, we could redesign our counties all by ourselves without Washington's help. The heart of the problem is that California's antiquated design, with its 58 counties drawn haphazardly more than a century ago, doesn't make sense today. The divides produced by our counties are part of a larger fragmentation in California, which has more than 6,000 governments with 480 cities and thousands of special districts that few Californians know anything about. And I want to make a point about that. So we're talking just one state out of 50 in the entire country, and we have 480 cities, thousands of special districts. Now, if you watch all of my videos, we are chasing around about 14 to 15 different local government entities, as well as county and regional government entities. And I have not found a single one yet that is not corrupt. So with that, it is my belief that every single governing structure in this country is corrupt. And so we are talking tens of thousands of corrupt government agencies around the country. And the reason why I am bringing this up, because daily I see comments on all of my videos that people are so glad they don't live in California. Bull! Yes, I agree with you. Some of what is in my videos is very unique to California, but much of it is not unique. For example, SCAG. I guarantee you that where you live has a SCAG. It's called a COG, or a Councils of Government, and I know this because there are about 300 COGs around the country. So I would be very surprised if there is any town in this country with more than a few hundred people that is not being run by a COG. So this is going on everywhere. This is not just in Southern California. And remember that what we are seeing here in Southern California with this RTP, this is the mega regions plan, the America 2050 plan, which means there are 10 other of this plan going on nationwide right now. We just happen to be the ones that caught one on camera. Research shows that regions that are split up among many governments have less affordable housing and more sprawl, because sprawl is so bad. congestion and segregation than those with more consolidated regional governance. So you see how this works? They care more about color and race and ethnicity and cultural background. They care about those things more than individual liberty and freedom. This is how these communists operate. They would rather focus all day long on skin color than freedom. And the reason why I say that is if you just have a local city council, you can go down twice a month and talk to them. And it doesn't take that long. Eventually, they will know who you are. You can set up meetings with them if you want. And you can get to know these people. The people at the local city council level are literally your neighbors. This is what freedom is about. It's about having representation, and it's about having easy access to that representation. We already know what the consolidated regional governance structure looks like. You can see it in the SCAG RTP video. There's 50 people voting on one item, and you can't touch those people. They're not going to talk to you. You have no representation in that type of format. But of course, what matters to these people is skin color. They don't care about you having representation because they don't care about you. California 2.0 shows how our biggest problems are regional, environmental systems, infrastructure, economic development, transit, and housing, but our counties don't match up with these regions, so California 2.0 argues for consolidating counties so that each region of the state would be one county. There will be 19 in the author's ideal structure, though California 2.0 suggests that even the old Spanish military's 10 territorial districts would fit California better than today's 58 counties. Such regional counties would need more power to devise regional solutions to the state's most pressing problems, schools, traffic, and housing. So as I said earlier, they want to consolidate power into the hands of the few. They want more power. And if California's politicians are to be taken seriously in their one-state war on climate change, they'll need to embrace truly regional counties. So there's the agenda right there. We can't fight climate change unless we consolidate power and give more power to few people. So all you people out there, whether you're Bernie Sanders people, Hillary people, communists, hardcore leftists, whatever you want to call yourself, all you people who claim to hate more power in the hands of the few, you better wake up, because your climate change agenda that you seem to be obsessed with is all about consolidating power into the hands of the few. Wake up! Today's state climate regulations are unlikely to make big progress because they require coordination among our fragmented local governments. You see, it's already happening though. We already have the regional governing bodies that are coordinating these quote-unquote big problems and are making progress. They've been doing it for decades, but they're now rolling it out. But if we had counties that actually fit our regions, California might have a fighting chance of saving the world. So there you go. If you're willing to save the world, then you should give up your power as an individual and be ruled by just a few. So I hope you all watch the videos of the SCAG Regional Transportation Plan. As I said, we have the exclusive. Nobody else anywhere will be reporting on this, so please help make those videos go viral.
We're the only certified instructors teaching at the moment to the public. The inventor's still teaching, but he's only doing dealerships at the moment.
Okay.
He gives all the public students to me.
Now, you said you were located in Bakersfield.
Bakersfield, California. Hopefully, I might be relocating, but at the moment, we're in Bakersfield.
Okay. Now, let me take a peek at a couple of these engines. So, you basically students bring these in, and you teach them how to convert these to the heat process.
Yes, I've had people bring in generators. I've had them bring in air compressors. I have done a SR5 1989 four-cylinder pickup. Here are the pictures for that one. I just let them bring them in, and we convert them from scratch. First, we teach the theory, why it works, and what we know so far, because there's only so much that we learned about it. Other than that, they won't allow us to put a bunch of stuff in books yet. So.
Well, now, from your experiences, then, how did the Geet engines perform compared to a conventional engine?
Oh, they perform much smoother. You got much different RPMs. You can go as low as, I've gone down to 100 RPMs per minute and not have, you know, anything of any crazy vibrations. I've gone up to, this motor right here is rated to only go 3,000 RPMs. We've gotten up to 7,000 RPMs without blowing it.
And that's just looks like a lawnmower engine.
This
right?
is a 3-horsepower Briggs & Stratton.
Okay. So a lot of this then just depends, it's just because of the Geet process, it makes it burn cleaner or?
Well, what it does is it transmutes the elements to an elemental gas so that then it could burn in cleanly, but also clean your motors up.
Oh, kind of a plasma reaction.
Exactly. They've said that it comes out as a plasma state because it does not condense back into anything.
Oh, okay.
It stays in the plasma. You can actually trap the plasma gas.
So this would lower emissions probably as well.
We guarantee a minimum of 80% reduction in emissions.
Wow.
But there are closed loop systems where you have self-sustaining and zero emissions.
Now, if I remember right, it's been a while since I looked into Geet, but you have the bubbler over here, and one of the things that I liked about the system was, in the demonstrations I've seen in the past, they've mixed gasoline and water.
Yes.
And it'll actually filter that out. Can you tell me a little bit about that, how it can run on different fuels?
Okay. Well, for demonstration purposes, and I'll be showing this weekend, is we set up our bubbler and it's glass, so you could see what we put in there. We set up a mixture of 20% gasoline and 80% mixture of soda pop, urine, coffee. Some people use hot sauce. Many multiple things. It all depends on how you tune your rod. This is a very crucial part to the fuels that you want to run. And this is just simply the bubbler that'll vaporize the fuel.
Okay.
So there's a vacuum in here, a constant vacuum that will vaporize the fuel or help vaporize the fuel, along with the vortex that's being created with the spot with the vacuum. And that's how you get. That's how you mix up your different liquids.
So this might have advantages then also in developing nations, right? Where maybe the gas isn't clean or.
At the moment, I am part of a co-op that's going to be going down to Costa Rica, and we're going to be helping them and teaching their school how to run this. Because their goal is to go green by 2021, and they don't have no natural resources, so I don't think we should run into much resistance.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you about. Let me ask you about this engine. This is this is one of the training engines, right?
This is one of the this is one of my students' motors. He built it, and he got it to run on 50% gas and 50% for lack of a better word, let's say
coffee.
Let's say coffee. And he let me borrow it for the convention. And as you can see, we got a sight glass in here, so you can see what the rod does when you turn it on.
Oh, I see. Obviously, we don't want to run it in the hotel, okay, so the fuel comes out of the bubbler, and it's vaporized, goes through the tube. Now, this is the reactor, as I recall.
This is the reactor.
This is the this pipe.
This is a pipe within a pipe right here.
Oh,
you have your
okay.
exhaust. Then you have your reactor pipe. And inside of the reactor pipe is where your reactor rod is.
And so the cooling coil. Right down in here.
The rod is sitting right about here right now. But when you start the motor, the rod will actually levitate and spin where it wants to be.
Okay.
So you got to build the reactor to the proper size to let the rod find its home.
Oh, okay. Okay, so it kind of sets itself.
Yes. It has a mind of its own, almost.
So, well, it finds the resonance of whatever material that you're building.
Exactly.
The gap.
Well, you got to help it find, depending on, you got to know what you're going to be running first. So then you can build your reactor. Because there's different lengths and different setups. You can go horizontal.
So you can't change your materials after you've built it.
Yes, you can, but your efficiency won't be as great as it could be when it's properly tuned. Let's say this one, it's set up where I could just replace the rod and run a different fuel. But my efficiency won't be as great. It'll still be good, but it won't be as great.
What kind of fuels do you typically run with it, or can you run with
it? I've run crude gas pulled straight out of the ground, crude oil. I've gotten a gas motor to run on diesel with almost no pollution. And no kind of misfires or anything like that. Typically, what I'm going to be setting up for is crude oil, because I got a lot of connections for crude oil. But that would be for me. As far as my students, well, they can come and they tell me what they want to run on.
Yeah. Now, typically with diesel, like your spark plugs wouldn't ignite that. But in this case, since it's vaporizing, it's probably just the heat in the reaction chamber,
well,
right?
It's no longer diesel when it comes out here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Whatever you put in here comes out completely different molecular structure. And it's basically what they've been recorded is when you run crude oil, they've gotten helium, oxygen, hydrogen, and many other or different kinds of...
just all sorts of constituents.
Just elemental gases, actually.
Yeah.
So, and you bring them over here and they burn really good.
Now, with converted cars and stuff, when people convert those, have you when you drive those, how do they typically drive?
Well, the one vehicle that I've converted so far has a really, really smooth idle, and it runs really good. Only problem we had with it was getting the proper vaporization. That's crucial. We were actually giving it a little bit too much fuel using a 3-horsepower and a 6-horsepower lawnmower carburetor.
Oh, okay.
Now just imagine that. I mean, you're having these small little carburetors, and that was giving it way too much fuel. So that's kind of the hard part right there.
Interesting. Now, if people want to learn more, if they wanted to get in touch with you, how could they get in touch with you?
They could go to the inventor's website, geetinternational.com, call him up, and he'll let you know where I'll be teaching, et cetera, et cetera. Or you can get one of my business cards and flyers, and it has my email and cell phone on there. You can call me whenever.
That's right, you're listening to the Knights of the Round Table with King Shaziz the Terrible, who rules with an iron fist, man. I've been joined by my honorable knight, Thomas, here, and I posted a couple of videos over there in the Super Chat HTML on www.shazizradio.com/superchat.html. If you want to become an honorary knight of the round table, just show up in there and, you know, post pertinent links and talk with one another and all that. Over there at the superchat.html, you actually had the chance to talk to not just the people from Shaziz Radio, but the Awake Radio chat room as well. Anyway, I posted a couple links in there of some videos. One of an individual running a lawnmower off of vapors, gas vapors. And this is really important because it also falls into hydrogen technology, the way that this actually functions. But if you scroll on down a little bit, you'll see they also posted a video over there about from Grindall. I can't remember what the heck his YouTube name is. Have to look back there again. Okay, this is really good for radio. Let me see if I can find it.
You're the one doing it.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to guilty party anyway. Grindall, he does community activism. Grindall 61 up there on YouTube. Now, I'd really like you to go over there and check out him and his lady Tressie. They actually get active in their communities, and they go to all the different little town meetings and stuff like that, and they hold their elected leadership accountable. And so there's a group out there called SCAG that's kind of like an unelected board of people that basically get together and have meetings, and they vote on recommendations for you know, future laws or whatever they're going to put in play, to like a gas tax or whatever for when you travel, you pay per mile for how many miles you go for your gas tax or however that works. But either way, it's something that you'll find in every community. There are unelected boards in your community that really do affect it, the way that you're going to pay or not pay on taxes, so to speak. Kind of like the old climate change agenda. That's what it's all about, pretty much. And some would even go as far as to say that it is Agenda 21 related. If you're not familiar with Agenda 21, go out there and Google up United Nations Agenda 21 and see what kind of things that they hope to make a sustainable world under a one world government kind of scenario. Essentially, people, a small group of people running the world. I gotta turn that doggone heater off before I die, man. It's either too hot or it's too cold. It's like climate change, man. The global warming, it's terrible. Alright? It's either snowing up to the back of your neck or it's, you know, hot. Anyway, the reason why I posted that particular video on there is because people need to be proactive in their communities to ensure that they're not pretty much getting railroaded.
Getting the shaft.
Yeah. Getting the shaft, getting railroaded into something that they wouldn't have voted for if they'd known about it. And I can understand that people are busy and they work hard and they, you know, they got families to take care of. They ain't got time. And that's why they have government representatives. That's what you want to call them.
Trust.
Yeah. But in reality, just like the military-industrial complex out there, you know, Thomas Jefferson said that the price to freedom was eternal vigilance, and there's a whole lot to be said about that, you know. Something as small as a homeowners association can take away from your freedom just by you, you know, being complicit and allowing, like maybe the neighbor puts a flower pot outside that another neighbor don't like, or it doesn't match the code, or the house isn't painted the same color and the fence, or the grass isn't the same height as the neighbor's or whatever. Everything has to be neat and tidy and uniform, and if it doesn't, then, you know, they actually fine one another.
Then poo on you.
Yeah. And so you get into a kind of a communist kind of society there, you know, where there's a few that decide what the rules are, and the rest of you, you either comply or get kicked out of your homeowners association, which I guess you've got to sign some sort of agreement when you very first get into one of these communities that you're going to comply with the rules and regulations and stuff. But either way, it takes away from your rights. You're essentially giving away your rights by implied consent. You're not up there protesting and saying, look, I don't agree with this idea. Maybe I like this color flower pot in my yard, and, you know, don't care what you like. This is my yard. That kind of deal. Well, Tressie and Grindall, they go out to all these different meetings, and they point out that, you know, there's nobody there protesting. And I don't mean necessarily protesting. A protest could be something as simple as showing up and voicing your concerns that, you know, I don't agree with this. Toll roads or whatever you're trying to pull on us, you know, taxing us or trying to get us out of our cars onto bicycles, that kind of stuff. But these two are a prime example of what the community should be doing out there. Now, how does that relate to this other technology out there, such as the GEET engine and the vaporization of gas? Well, these communities that are all hollering about how they got to get this climate change thing under control and this and that are sitting on technology that they could have been using all along, and this wouldn't be an issue either. If they're talking about going green and reducing your carbon footprint, you've got scientifically proven technology right before your very eyes, and if you held the right people's feet to the fire, so to speak, they would build these technologies. The reason why the auto industry don't make the cars that you want out there, number one, is they're too doggone expensive and nobody's buying them. But if that's what you want, that's what they'll sell you. You see what I mean? It's not because they can't do it. The technology is available. The way that this lawnmower runs, when this guy's firing this up, he's got pretty much a bubbler system set up. And it only allows the fumes to get through a tube that goes down and feeds into your carburetor on your intake. So there's no gas in the gas tank whatsoever, and it's just feeding off the fumes, which is more than enough to run the doggone lawnmower and run it well. You know, on your car, you'll have what's known as a catalytic converter. And that's part of the clean air emissions and stuff like that. You also got a smog control pump on some of these vehicles that pretty much does same kind of thing. That pump is kind of pressurizing any exhaust and heating it up and then sending it back into the intake and cleaning that fuel up so that you're not wasting a whole lot of fuel out the exhaust system. Well, that's what the catalytic converter does. A catalytic converter is nothing more than a reburner of excess fuel that didn't get burned up in the combustion portion of the deal. And so, right. Yeah.
And it releases a ton of energy too, so it basically gets extremely hot.
Yep, and those catalytic converters will stay hot long after the vehicle even shuts off. You know? I know that for a fact. Mm-hmm. But also, if you look really close at a catalytic converter, they got a tube that comes off the side of it that actually feeds right back up into the intake once again. And I think it's some of them actually go back through the smog control, which basically keeps the pressure up so that it'll suck some of that exhaust back into the intake, which you're getting some of that unburnt fuel, getting to use it and get a little bit better economy out of gas anyway. But if it was engineered from the start, there wouldn't be no need for a catalytic converter. Essentially, what the GEET reactor is that they're calling plasma inside that reactor is a catalytic converter. That's all it is. What they got it is on the exhaust side. They got a rod that floats up and down inside there, and if you can imagine inside that exhaust system, it's really hot inside there. And so that rod will get really hot. So as you're pumping your fuel through the intake portion of the deal, then that vaporization goes through there and reburns just like the catalytic converter and gets redirected. Some of it will go out the exhaust, the muffler itself, but the majority of it will actually go back into the intake portion and be reburnt as fuel. Well, they showed that they put everything from coffee to trash to water and just with a 10% mixture of gasoline, and the doggone thing will still run, when in reality anything will burn if it's atomized properly. And so if you put all this trash in there, it's got a filter inside there where it's only going to allow vapors. It's not going to allow any solid to come up through there. It doesn't matter whether it's just basically crude oil with a little tiny bit of gas to it or whatever, you know, it's still going to make it, vapors are still going to make it up off of that and then come down through the system and be reburned. So, just with a little bit of engineering, you can turn any vehicle out there into a super efficient vehicle, because you're not burning tons of gas that you don't need to burn to run that doggone thing. You're going to get the same horsepower that you would by squirting all that fuel in there as you would be running off vapors. And in reality, you'll get better fuel mileage because you're running it efficiently. It doesn't take much to push that piston down when you're talking about vaporized gas. Well, the portion where they're putting actually water mixed in there with gas isn't surprising to me at all. Because water in its two components is hydrogen and oxygen. You got two hydrogens and one oxygen in there. Is that correct, Thomas? H2O? Yeah, two hydrogens and one oxygen on water. Okay, some people call it HHO. Well, anyway, those two separated will burn. And it's not new technology, because back in the old days, they used to wait till they got the tractors up to operating temperature, and then they would inject small quantities of water into the cylinder and run it just like fuel. So it wouldn't matter if you mixed soda pop or water or just a tiny bit of gas or combination of all of it, any kind of liquid down inside that reactor. I mean, you wouldn't run that through your normal fuel filter and into your car, because it'd plug up your jets and gum up the system to where your car wouldn't even run. But the way that this is set up, none of that stuff's actually making it in, too. You could actually put sugar in this doggone thing mixed with a gas. And everybody who knows sugar in a gas tank is a bad thing, because it gums up your doggone fuel lines, and it's a nightmare to get cleaned out. And you have to do everything from taking your carburetor off and rebuilding it. And if you got fuel injectors, they're pretty much trash.
Or you just put alcohol, pure, like 100% alcohol in there and burn it all out.
Yeah. Well, you could do that too. But the point is, Echo. The point is, if you got these things designed up from the get-go to be efficient, and all you're sending into that intake portion is a fine vapor, a fine mist or a vapor, then number one, you're not going to use near the fuel. You'd literally have a vehicle that could get anywhere from 100 to a couple hundred or more miles per gallon off of the same amount of fuel. Because if you actually watch an injector or even the jets on a regular carbureted system, you got a stream of gas going in there. And it's not necessary. You don't need that much fuel in order to run that vehicle. Back in the old days, they called it, it was running lean is what they called it. You'd see that it when the exhaust would smell like gas, and it'd be like real black exhaust coming out the back. You could tell by the exhaust how the engine was running. If you had white smoke, that was oil mix. If you had black smoke, that was it was running too lean. It had too much gas going in there.
You mean so too rich?
Too rich. Well, that's what.
Yeah, lean is whenever it's literally like burning everything.
Yeah, well,
using next to nothing. You know, lean is in
Missouri redneck technology from back when my grandpa was alive. That's what they called it. All right. And
well, they were backwards to the rest of the world.
Yeah, it's like
everybody else is calling it rich on the you know, whenever you burn it, you're pushing too much gas and not burning it all, lean whenever you're not running up in there and doesn't want to run properly. You have no horsepower.
Well, it's kind of like the word stink over here. You know, they'd say that's kind of ripe. You know, like instead of stink, that's ripe. All right. Well. You know, you got to watch that. You go to different areas, certain words mean certain things in some areas, and you go overseas and you'll hear something about something else. I'm not going to repeat some of the ones I heard, but yeah. So, terminology difference, yeah, but it is. It's running rich. It's dark, black smoke coming out of there when it's burning too much fuel. Usually when it's burning really clean, you know, you don't see no exhaust coming out, you know, outside of maybe...
You mean it's trying to burn too much fuel.
Yeah, but it ain't.
But it's not able to do it, because it's designed to work a certain way, so it's only going to burn so much. In fact, if you could actually vaporize all that and cram it all into that piston, with it being too much like that, you would end up with basically a cup instead of a piston, because it'd blow out.
Yeah. Well, there's a deal that's actually in steam generation called a water hammer that can actually that can actually affect a car when you got too much fuel or whatever inside that cylinder, that it can actually build up a little bit of moisture long enough to act like a hammer inside there, and you'll end up pinging around in your piston, and that can do damage to the cylinder, you know, and the piston itself. And then when your car's not shutting off, they call that like dieseling, you know, whenever you shut your key off and the doggone thing keeps on running because it's hot inside there. Yeah. And it's trying to keep on combusting because of the temperature and the pressure.
That's also leakage of some sort.
Yeah.
Because it won't keep running if there's nothing getting into the engine.
No, but it'll
shut off.
It'll drive.
Something's stuck.
It'll drive you nuts whenever you shut your car off and it sits there and does that.
Refuses to shut off.
Yeah. Sometimes you got to flood it out so it'll quit.
Who's the master here? Stop that.
Yeah.
Stop running. I said stop.
But if you
Why
got
are you listening?
But if you got vapor, you don't have that problem because everything in the vapor's ignited every time your doggone spark plug goes off, and you know you're not ventilating unburnt fuel out the exhaust, which ends up going down into the catalytic converter. There's a reason why a catalytic converter gets so doggone hot, because there's literally fire inside that thing. You know, if you could look inside of a catalytic converter and see that there's a burn, constant burn going on in there, and I can't remember, I think it's titanium or platinum or whatever that they got.
Platinum? Platinum's the catalyst. That's why people pay good money for ruined catalytic converters, because the platinum's still in there. It's just been, it's a noble metal, so it doesn't want to react with other things and have them stick to them, but eventually it happens. It can be forced to happen, and when they do, that means basically it's ruined as a catalytic converter. But the platinum is still platinum. It's still there. It can be extracted and refined.
And it'll hold heat really good because of the way it's designed. And that's its purpose. So that's what's going on in the GEET system, is that rod inside that exhaust is getting probably red hot, you know, not enough to be molten metal, otherwise the whole system failure would be imminent. But it's getting hot enough that anything that passes that rod is going to instantaneously combust. And the gases off that combustion is what is actually running that vehicle. So the way that some of these folks understand how the GEET system works isn't necessarily the correct method, because they're actually not doing anything that the modern-day engine hasn't already done. You can run straight water through that. After you get the thing started and it up to operating temperature, you can use the water vapors off of the doggone thing to run it. That's why I was trying to do that video about taking an electric motor and running a gas engine backwards, not backwards, the same way that it would be running, but backwards in the sense that I'm turning the motor by the shaft that, you know, normally propels, and spinning the cylinders, the pistons inside the cylinder, acting as a compressor first. So it's going to be acting like an air compressor first, and while that air is compressing, it'll raise the temperature up in that cylinder, and then once the cylinder temperature gets up over 160 to 180 degrees, then you start injecting water inside that cylinder that will in turn flash to steam, and you'll get that pressure, and the more that it runs, and the higher the heat gets inside there, eventually you'll be able to literally ignite the separation of the hydrogen and oxygen inside there with the existing spark plug system. And so, you know, it's not doing anything different than what's been done before, other than the fact that you're starting it off by running an electric motor to spin that thing around to get that compression and that temperature up. What do you think, Thomas?
I'm not sure. I'd have to see something like that happen. See, do some testing. You know, that's what research really is actually putting a hand to materials and testing them out. You know, and seeing what you get.
Yeah,
record your results.
Go watch that video when you get an opportunity to. Let me see if I can find the name of it on my channel. You can actually see me doing this process. It doesn't really get up to running yet, all right? Because the way that I was doing it was, I think I was using a drill this time around, but let me see if I can find the doggone video.
Oh, this is not the washing machine motor. We already saw that one.
No, not the washing machine motor. Doggone it, where's it at? I think it was my video called Try It. All right, and it has basically a hydrogen symbol on the front. And essentially, I'm turning a motor with the power drill, and I'm spinning it to raise the temperature up. And plus, I'm injecting water into it. But once it gets hot, you can actually start seeing that engine start to buck. So it never got hot enough to run, and I think that's because I was getting too much water in there. I needed to vaporize it before I did this process. That's the reason why I believe I wasn't able to get it to kick over. But you can actually see that when it got to the right temperature, that this engine actually started to buck as if it was beginning to pressurize and heat up. And when the water hit those cylinders, the steam expansion would push that piston down and help it along. You see what I'm saying here? Hello?
Are you throwing me under a bus?
Yeah, you keep...
Is that the sound of my bones crunching into the wheels of a bus?
Yeah, you keep...
I've already been ran over by a car, that's why I got a metal plate in one of my legs. Come on, man.
Man, that sucks.
I'm going to be covered in metal by the time you're done.
If I throw magnets at you, will they stick to your leg?
It's titanium, so no.
No, it's not. It says, what is that, non-magnetic metal? What's the terminology for that? Anyway, so you got all this technology that if you actually use properly, you could get vehicles to run so efficiently there wouldn't be no doggone exhaust to worry about. Instead of these guys out there trying to tax everybody and their brother for money that will never be seen in the industry portion of it for advancements in making these things run better, instead, it'll go into the greedy pockets of the people who want a new tennis court or a golf club or a golf park or whatever. Something that the elite want.
Mary Farland? You know? What?
Yeah.
No money for public schools or anything else, but she's got an arch and a reflecting pool at the Capitol now. The one that's pushing for for all kinds of iconography to be... established all around there with the taxpayers' dollar.
Well, that's the thing here in Missouri. They passed riverboat gambling. All right. Well, see, technically these guys are on the water. They're supposed to be on the water, but I've seen some boats that are in moats. And the way that they got that through was that they promised to pay the school districts, all these school districts, money, you know, off of the winnings or whatever. Because, usually the house is the one that's going to win the most money, and every once in a while some lucky turkey goes through there and hits a jackpot, and then everybody else thinks that they can do it too, but the odds of you winning are slim to none. But people go anyway, and they feed their entire paychecks into these doggone machines and stuff like that on the blackjack table and roulette and all that. Well, I ain't really seen no improvements on the community down here as far as schools looking better and having more funding and better buses and safety, all that kind of stuff, from the so-called tax money. So, who's being held accountable for the tax money from that entire system? It's hard to say. But I can tell you there's probably some really wealthy individuals who own casinos down through there. What do you think, man?
Right. Well, I caught you that time. You tried to shove me and then just ducked out of the way.
Well, I'm fighting this doggone cold again. I'm having problems breathing. But anyway, the technology is available to...
Blame global warming, man.
I know. It's like summertime cold. Here we are. What the heck month is this, doggone it? April. Here we are in April. And they're already talking about a freeze coming up here again. Right? So, my wife's got some plants that she got to bring in and out because if it freezes, it'll whack her plants, and she don't want to do that. But either way, they're talking about global warming, yet I'm still running my heater. Right? And... So I would like to say that for all those Californians out there who's into the whole global warming and all the global warming freaks out there who preach it like it's some
sort of... Send that global warming your way because you need some?
Send it to my house, man. Come on. Help a brother out because I'm getting cold. And I hate being cold. one minute it's warm and then I gotta go outside and it's cold and then my nose is running and I'm getting frustrated and aggravated. You know, just think of all the trees you could save by sending global warming my way. I wouldn't have to cut down trees to make Kleenexes and stuff. Man. Anyway, understanding how this technology works or could be modified, the only flaw that I've actually seen so far in this vaporization deal is that just like a hydrogen torch, you need a flashback arrestor in there because if you're running vapors off of this thing, you definitely wouldn't want a flashback going back into your fuel tank system. Mm-hmm. That would be bad.
All right, so for Homer Simpson.
So there has to be a way where you take a little tiny bit of gas and it kind of maybe drips down into a chamber that has a flashback arrestor on it. Large enough for the gas molecules to be able to get through but not get back the other direction. Kind of like hydrogen. You ever watch how they make homemade hydrogen flashback arrestors? They'll cram a bunch of copper sponge inside there really tight, and the hydrogen molecule is small enough to squeeze its way through, but on the way back it'll pressurize that side and won't allow it to get back in there and burn it. It actually puts the fire out before it gets back to the actual tank that's got the hydrogen in it. And so they need some sort of system, a flashback arrestor set up so that there's no way that those fumes can ignite all the way back through the fuel line into the tank. But this turkey, he's got on the lawnmower, he's got a glass jar sitting up there where you can see the gas wobbling around inside there, and not too far away from that is the muffler system. And so I'm seeing, you know, a possibility of a tragedy if he doesn't get that resolved and keep that doggone glass jar away from there. You know, if the glass jar fell off the lawnmower and broke, and for some weird reason there was a spark around that gas vapor, he might be not too happy with the situation when that's done. The asbestos, the firewalker, man. But you got to use common sense. But if it was engineered properly,
I don't know why they call it asbestos. Why don't they call it asbirus?
Yeah,
ashottis.
Well, there used to be this joke when I was in grade school about sitting on the stove and getting an aspirin. Aspirin, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Ha ha, hearty har har, tahee. Yuck yuck. Anyway.
There you are.
Hey, how's it going, hey, Raymond?
Let me turn the volume down a little bit.
Well, anyway, I don't know. Raymond normally doesn't listen in before he jumps in, so he's like just jumps in blind, but he's usually ready to go.
That goes straight there.
All right, well, basically, we kind of talked about a couple different subjects so far about, you know, California kind of setting a standard for environmental kind of laws and regulations to go across there, and people needing to be able to go to their communities and pay attention to these unelected boards that put all these recommendations out that eventually end up becoming law or whatever. And the whole concept of the deal was that it's all under the climate change agenda where they're talking about carbon emissions, and yet here they are. There's one guy in California from the one video that's in California that's showing them how to run using the GEET system, basically crud through your engine that is running it. But what in reality is what they're doing with this GEET system is they're using it as a catalytic converter and sending back, they're sending vapors in and reburning that fuel from the exhaust. The wasted fuel from the exhaust actually makes it back into the intake portion, and it's running a doggone lawnmower or the whatever the engine they put it to. So the technology, when you brought that vaporizer down there, I need to get a hold of one of those so that I can redo that video that I was talking to Thomas about, where you're actually running a gasoline engine backwards as a compressor, and then getting the cylinders up to operating temperature, and then when the temperature gets high enough, then you start injecting water vapor into that cylinder. And I am positive that it will run that way. And even if you had to put just a tiny bit of gas inside there just to get, I know it's not the right word, but to raise the octane level to make it more flammable for a second, you see what I mean? Just enough to get the fire started, you know. Once that thing was up to proper operation.
We didn't start the fire, it was always burning.
We didn't start the fire. I remember that song. See what you did, Thomas?
You know, eventually, one of these days, somebody's going to understand what I've been saying all along.
Well,
I don't want to repeat myself, because I've already done that 250 times.
If Pete and Repeat were in a boat and Pete fell out, who'd be left?
Yeah. All right, I lied. I'm going to say it again. What's the most powerful thing on the face of this earth that's ever been tested and proven and nobody's paying attention? Water.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Water. Oh, we're running out of fossil fuel. You don't need fossil fuel. You just need to learn how to use water properly.
Well, you know, they also talked about purifying water, water filtration systems. They have an actual torch out there that runs on HHO. And what you get out the other side is clean water.
Yes.
So, I don't understand.
No carbon emissions, so it doesn't taint whatever it is that you're trying to heat up either.
All right. Yeah. Class. I lied again. I'm going to say it again. Gasoline and air compressed. Explode, you ignite it, it explodes, it expands 350 times its size. You heat water, it turns into steam, it expands 1,600 times its size. We're talking 3.7 point something another times more powerful than gasoline.
Alright, and there's one other thing to point out too.
On gasoline, when we could be running them on steam.
There's one other thing to point out, too, that whenever you go watch a video on how they actually refine crude oil and finally get it to the stage of being gasoline. I'm not going to spoil it for you, because I actually want you to find out for yourself. But look for the word hydrocarbon.
Okay, there you go.
So you go to go out and watch a video on how they actually refine crude oil, which is a big, thick, cruddy black mess that you don't want to get in your hair. And watch how they process this until they
finally. Unless you're James Dean.
Yeah, if you're James Dean, then that would be good, because then you could put that, like in that movie, I can't remember what the heck, The Book of Love, this kid had greased his hair back and went over to talk to his girlfriend, and he was reenacting the scene from James Dean, and he had his head up against the wall, left a big giant grease spot on the wall. And then he told his friend that it looked like somebody threw a greasy cheeseburger at the wall. Yeah. Anyway, hydrocarbon is the thing you want to look at. And watch the doggone method by which they actually take and they get this crude oil into a liquid form that you can put in your gas tank and it'll flow freely and actually burn. You might be surprised at what's inside your gasoline. Alright? So, when we talk about HHO technology and water fuel and stuff like that, it's not new technology, people.
Nope.
It's not.
Nope. It's not. It's been there all along. It's nobody's paying attention.
Yep.
Education.
And so, for you folks that are listening in California, I love you, man, but just look, come on. You're standing next to the ocean that has tons and tons and tons and tons of water in it. Not only could you corner the sea salt market, but you could actually have plenty of fresh water to drink if you just took a little bit of information that we're trying to share with you. Call over to Dubai and they'll help you out. They'll show you how to make desalination plants. They pump thousands of gallons, if not millions of gallons, up to the tip top of a skyscraper and let it drain back down for flushing their toilets and running water and taking showers and all that. They built their land that they're standing on out of compacted sand, for Pete's sake, right out of the ocean. All right? And they got skyscrapers on this stuff. They ain't thirsty, and they're in what would be classified as a terrible spot if you're, you know, into believing that you're standing next to the ocean and it's okay to die of thirst. Man, come on. Use the electrolysis process. Separate the hydrogen and oxygen. Of course, you got to have some electricity to do it, so, you know, you're going to need some solar panels or something that can push out a little bit of amperage. And then, turn that doggone salt water, use the water for the conductivity in the water to, get the electricity to be able to flow through the water to crack it. Once it's cracked and it's separated in its two components, which now would be three components because you'd have the salt, but once it's separated into all its different components, then you take and recombine the hydrogen and oxygen back together, and what you get out the other side, man.
Yeah, put anybody? The hydrogen and the oxygen together and you get water.
Yeah.
But use it to run your dang-gone cars.
Well, yeah. And if you get thirsty,
you drive down the road and you can pollute all of California with water. Clean, clear water.
Well, by our method, if you had a stainless steel doggone gas tank, and you was running your car on water and you get thirsty, you get one of them silly sippers and stick it down inside your gas tank and take off a slog or two, man.
Oh, wait a minute. You're talking about salt water here.
I'm talking about regular water.
I think take the silly sipper and put it in your exhaust. There's where the clean water is.
I'm talking about putting pure water into your gas tank, and you're talking about salt water. You don't want salt water in your gas tank. I just said using the electrolysis process you could get rid of the salt. Man, I ain't drinking salt water.
Alright, what you do is you go out in the ocean, you build ships from barges, you put solar panels on them, you take the salt water in the ocean direct, crack it into hydrogen and oxygen. The salt does not enter into the phase. All it does is it's a catalyst. It does not enter. It causes the reaction. It allows the electricity to flow through the water and crack the water into hydrogen and oxygen. You take the hydrogen and oxygen, you bottle it, and you sell it as fuel for a car.
All right, now, listen.
People buy this stuff because they're buying gasoline anyway, and they're polluting the atmosphere, okay? But now all of a sudden they're buying hydrogen and oxygen, and they're running the cars on this. And coming out of the exhaust is pure, clean water.
All right, now listen. It's simple, man. And it's all declassified information. All right. Now go out.
It's simple. It's
go out and look. Go out and look for old military manuals, boiler technician manuals, machinist mate manuals, and look for a section called desalinization. I can't even say it. Somebody say that.
I'll help you.
All right.
Desalination. Go ahead.
Well, in 1984, I was running around in a ship called a DDG. 21 USS Cochran. It was a guided missile destroyer. It had four boilers, four engines, and two huge props in the back. Well, when we started off, before we left, we filled our water tanks up with fresh water. And then when we got up to sea, they'd have to watch the water level in the fresh tanks, because you cannot run salt water through a boiler because it will destroy it right shortly.
Alright.
So at a certain level of the water tank, you had to shift the water over to salt water for people to take showers with, which essentially was pumped right out of the ocean. But they had to make fresh water after it was all said and done. They had to have, doggone it. When you condense the condensers, they had to have big condensers that would take the steam off of the condensation and flash it back into water, pump that water back down into the system, and now you had fresh water that you could run in the boiler again. So, the diagrams, the information on how to desalinate water will be right there in those military manuals. And they have in-depth diagrams that show you how that boiler runs from start to finish. Now, they're using gas turbines and going to be using hydrogen ships before too long. But back in the day, when those boilers were running, that's how they did it. They made their fresh water out to sea. When you're out to sea for 60 to 90 days at a time, and you got anywhere from 200 or 300 or more sailors on that ship, there's a lot of water gets used. And it has, yeah. And it has to be, you'll have to maintain that water. You can't just have somebody bring you a ship of water out every time you get thirsty. You got to make it on the fly. And that's what they did. So if you live in California and you're dying of thirst, or if you live near the ocean and you're dying of thirst in the year 2016, I don't know what to tell you, man.
You know, what you're saying is amazing. I mean, military manuals, nobody reads them except the people in the military. And why is the military so big? Because they read the manual.
Yeah.
They learn.
Attention to detail is what they say.
I don't know, a few people I've talked to that are in the military are kind of irritated with everyone they were in the military with because they didn't read the manual.
Oh, but yeah, you'd always say
it's in the manual, why ain't you reading? Exactly. What? That's reading. I don't want to read. Okay, that's in California. They want to go to college and get a degree and learn. Yeah, right. What are you learning? You're not learning anything beneficial to your life or anybody else's.
Well, a lot of these college-educated geeks are actually running the government nowadays.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. Don't even get me started there. Whew. Don't even get me started there.
Well, you know, when you think you're smart and you think you're smarter than everybody else, you don't listen. You don't listen to somebody comes along and says, hey, instead of you squirting this gas in like this, don't you realize that it'll burn better in a vapor and cleaner?
Yeah.
You know?
Uh-huh.
Well, instead of them out there trying to screw people over and steal from them, and I'm saying flat out steal to them from bogus science, they could use basic science to not have carbon emissions.
Exactly.
You know, if you can run water purely, you can still have the power of an internal combustion engine. And if you run gasoline, even if you run gasoline, you could have a perfectly clean exhaust system. They actually have closed-loop systems that there is no exhaust. It actually gets refed back into the doggone system. You know, it just pulls air from the outside so it don't create a vacuum and it suck itself till it implodes, you know. But all it needs is oxygen to burn. You need three things. What three things do you need for a fire, man? Anything? Anybody?
You need a combustible material. You need a catalyst so it will combust, be it oxygen or whatever. And you need a spark.
You need an ignition, a fuel source, and oxygen.
There
and you
got
a fire. So, my question to the people out there in the world is, who lit the match, man?
Who lit the match? I love it. Nobody's lighting the match.
Yeah.
That's what the problem is. We got all this fuel laying around, everybody in the entire world is surrounded by all this fuel. And nobody got a lighter.
There's one of the comedians out there did a doggone deal about the barbecue, you know, and they're trying to get this barbecue started, and the guy's talking about going to throw some gasoline on it, and he goes throw gasoline on the fire, and then the barbecue bursts in flames, and the dude's on fire, and he says, roll Charlie around. Charlie be all right. You know, just roll him around. That's essentially what you're doing. You're throwing a bunch of gas that you don't need on the fire and wondering why it is that the operating temperatures of your engine are running so high. You know, you could actually reduce the operating temperature of that engine if you didn't cram so much fuel and oxygen inside there trying to get it to burn.
Right.
By vaporizing, you would actually bring the temperature down to a reasonable amount. But they're running inefficiently, man.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. So, there's the technology right there in front of your face. Now, don't do it the redneck style and put you a glass jar up underneath your hood and run the vapors off there, because anything goes wrong and you get a bunch of vapors up underneath there, all it takes is one spark and kapow. Now your car looks like heck, and you probably ain't gonna fare so well either. But remember, stop, drop, and roll.
I love that. Hey, this is a great show, man. You guys are great.
Hey, you know what? When I said that stop, drop, and roll, I told my brother one time that if you get kicked in the cojones, then you're supposed to stop, drop, and roll.
You don't even have to tell somebody to do that. They will automatically.
Well, you got to make sure that they know the procedure.
Oh, man.
That's got to be done correctly. I can't even talk right.
So I guess really and truly, what we need to do is force people to do what comes natural and kick them in the homies, huh?
Yeah, but
for example, eliminate all the gasoline. I mean, what's the government trying to do? Oh, we're running out of fossil fuel. Well, then, what are we going to do?
All right, listen, I got to tell you about the Arapaho. All right.
Okay.
Long, long time ago, a trend started that was pretty scary. My brother was standing outside at the baseball field, and he had the baseball stance, and he's watching the home plate, you know, and he got the baseball stance. Well, he had been hassling me all the way through the whole ball game, and so I run up behind him, and I threw my foot up in between his legs and kicked him in the cojones. But before I did that, I hollered really loud, "Arapaho!" And he dropped, and he was halfway laughing and halfway crying at the same time as he fell down. And he said, "What in the heck was that that you yelled right before you kicked me in the cojones?" I started a trend, and those are the most scary words that you'll ever hear in your life, because you know the moment you hear that Arapaho, split second later you're going down. That was terrible, man. But you know, it's been an ongoing trend. Now the kids of the newer generations are running around trying to get the old folks with it, and I told them, don't do that to me, I'm too old, man.
It's called conditioning.
Yeah. Anyway, that's just a little
condition
bit of
your brother
trivia from way back in the day. So if you're ever around my brother or whatever, and you hear those words, yeah,
put your cup on.
Yeah. But you know, it's just on this other technology here. If people really care about the planet and they really want to get things going, then they need to get people out there engineering a proper method to do this with a flashback arrestor. You could actually make a fuel tank that was a storage tank where you could store, you know, you wouldn't even need as much fuel. You wouldn't have to have like a 20-gallon tank. I think you could do it with a 1-gallon tank.
Probably.
But, you know, you could have this this fuel tank to where it had, you know, like baffles inside of it or some sort of material that wouldn't break down over the years with gasoline inside of it. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
So that you got like little tiny pockets of fuel, and so that if it like it took an impact, it wouldn't be, you see what I'm trying to say here, like a safety fuel tank that they put in race cars?
Yep. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. So you could make a safer fuel tank, and all you would be needing off of that fuel tank is the vaporization. You wouldn't want anything, you know, any kind of liquid gas going through there.
You know, back in the early 1940s, a guy by the name of Charles Nelson Poe did exactly what you're talking about.
Well, And that technology needs to come to the forefront to find that information, bring it up there, put it down on the table, and show them what this is what this person was doing. You know, when they run these alcohol burning go-karts, go down there and talk to one of the doggone technicians whenever they're putting these things together, and ask them how they modify a gasoline engine to run on alcohol, because it's a totally different deal. Everybody knows that alcohol will vaporize really fast.
Real fast.
Yeah, and if you have a glass of alcohol sitting out there, it'll dry itself out. You'll have an empty glass before too long because it'll evaporate really quick.
In the early 1950s, a guy by the name of Michael Fish invented a carburetor that would burn any combustible liquid.
Yeah.
It was self-adjusting. You could empty your gas tank or your alcohol tank, whatever you wanted, whatever it was, your tank, empty it, put it in paint thinner, and the car would run. Put in lacquer thinner, it would run. Acetone, it would run. But it had to be pure. It was called the M1 carburetor. It was actually put on a production line in 1953. It was sold and used until 1958, when he sold the patent, and all of a sudden, within less than 18 months, there was not an M1 carburetor to be found in the United States anywhere, not even in junkyards.
I believe it.
Why?
Because somebody bought them up and got them out and shut them up. Now, you can go from natural gas to propane, butane, what other gases like that are there? Methane. All these different gases will run an internal combustion engine. But whenever you change from natural gas, you have to change the regulator in the natural gas to the other one because they have different burn rates and you don't want as much of one.
Where I ran out of gasoline in my truck. I was 3 miles from a service station. I just happened to have my oxygen settling torch in the back of my truck, and I simply just ran the hose around to the carburetor, turned the acetylene on, and drove very slowly, mind you, to the service station. I didn't have to walk. I didn't have to hitchhike. I just took what I had and ran my motor, gas, any combustible vapor.
Well, what should
internal combustion engine?
What should have been an eye-opener is whenever cans of starting fluid came out.
Yeah, there you go.
Right? Now, if your car runs out of gas and it doesn't have fuel up in the line and the pump hasn't got it up to the bowl to fill up the float of the carburetor, then you have to get that thing to start somehow to get it to turn over. So you get this starting fluid, you spray it down the carburetor, and all it is a vapor. And then you turn it over, and it'll run the engine for a second, and then eventually the pump will get the fuel up to the carburetor and start running under its own. But to hear how that thing will actually start with that starting fluid, just a vapor. Imagine you use a can of starting fluid. You could probably get quite a few miles out of one can of starting fluid if it wasn't evaporating the way... You know, when you spray that stuff in there, you don't just sit there and wait. You got to turn it over because that starting fluid will evaporate really fast, and it won't do nothing unless some of that got down into the intake. You see what I'm saying?
What you're saying right here is what people don't understand. Gasoline will not burn. It will not burn. No liquid burns. Only the fumes from the liquid will burn.
So
people don't understand that because they don't pay attention when they're in school.
So why are we still injecting the liquid into the doggone car?
There you go. Why are we injecting the liquid into our engines? Vaporize it and use only the vapor.
Well, in reality, and I guess I'll go ahead and make a spoiler, in reality, you're actually burning water with your gasoline inside your engine.
Uh-huh.
Believe it or not. Now, there's a deal about you don't want to get water in your gasoline, because if that water isn't mixed with the gasoline properly, then you'll get a little bit of water that will actually get sucked up into the fuel line in the form of a bubble, and when that hits your system, then you got problems. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
Because you're still squirting it in the form of a liquid. Now you turn it into its separate components, and now you have a fuel. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So if that water in that gas tank was continuously agitated, you know, like as in your gasoline sloshing around inside your tank as you're driving down the road, it's continuously agitating that and keeping it mixed up, that's why you don't have the problem that you would. But if you let gasoline set long enough, you will find water in the bottom of that tank.
Yeah.
Not only from that, from the temperature difference inside the tank as the temperature different outside the tank, your gasoline will basically build up moisture in there. And if anybody's ever had a rusted gas tank and wondered why, that's why. You don't get rust from gasoline. You get rust from water.
No, you don't.
So, you guys got any thoughts on the matter?
Do I need to bring up sulfuric acid and ethanol alcohol like you get from corn mash makes diethyl ether?
Yeah, bring it up.
And the fact that if you expose it to light and air, it turns into explosive peroxides. It also vaporizes at a much lower temperature than the alcohol does, because it vaporizes at like 93 degrees.
Wow.
That we can use.
Yeah, then you'd have a doggone engine that you could touch when it's running.
Well, the other thing, though, too, is that you don't have to purify the alcohol in order to get it to break down and turn into diethyl ether. All you got to do is just throw some sulfuric acid in there with it, and it'll do it. It'll just keep busting it down until it's all broken down.
Somebody tell me if you've ever seen this article, and that I am not insane. There used to be a hot rod magazine. There used to be a hot rod magazine years ago, and one article I saw in this hot rod magazine years ago talked about this engine that they built out of plastic. It was a self-lubricating plastic that you could literally run it. It's an internal combustion engine. You could literally run this engine. The plastic was a high temp self-lubricating plastic that you could run it without any oil in it. All right? And they was going to build this for race cars. And so you essentially would have a lightweight, cheap, easy-to-make motor that was made completely out of plastic, with the exception of maybe some screws and nuts and bolts and that kind of stuff.
Why don't you make those out of plastic, too? Make plastic nuts and bolts and screws.
Yeah. Well, I saw this article. Even had a picture of the engine in there. Talked about how they could run this doggone engine to temperatures exceeding what the doggone race car motors would run. And it ran perfect. But I never saw that article ever again. I never saw photos of it. Never heard any mention of it. I mean, it just kind of disappeared right off the scene.
I wonder why.
And to this very day, it's like the unicorn of engines. I haven't been able to find any information. I've Googled the heck out of it. I haven't been able to find any information regarding it. But I know I saw that article. I read the doggone thing. I was interested because it was made out of plastic. Has anybody ever heard of that?
Nope.
Well, we got the technology. I believe we could actually build that motor. And just think of the implications, man. You got an engine that you wouldn't have to have oil in there. You'd put a tiny bit of oil in there to make sure that it never wore out, but you'd have an engine that would run for years without ever having any problems.
There was a guy in Florida in the late 60s that invented an engine that ran on chlorine and hydrogen. And the fuel was not chlorine and hydrogen. The fuel was light. Just plain old light. Because you saturated the chlorine and the hydrogen with light, and then when you put them in an internal combustion engine, compressed them and put it with a spark, it would explode and make hydrogen chloride. Then of course the power of the motor was more than sufficient to operate the machinery to separate the hydrous chloride back into hydrogen and oxygen. They ran the motor 23 hours and 40 minutes a day for 7 straight days. The only reason the 20 minute delay was to shut the engine down and change the oil. But they ran it for 7 days. There was absolutely no loss whatsoever. No measurable loss in hydrogen or chlorine.
Well, see, there's technologies out there that a lot of people don't even know have been around forever.
That article I read was in that science magazine, was National Geographic. It was some Popular Science magazine, back in the late 60s.
Well,
that was it. One article, one time. That's all. Nobody ever heard about it again, and I read it.
And the question is why? Why haven't we heard of any more about any of these? Because somebody either bought up all the doggone magazines and burned them so nobody'd find out and shelved the deal. You know, people buy up patents all the time because if I invent a device that's better than your device, you sure as heck don't want me selling mine because you're going to go out of business.
Right.
So it ain't like it's not something that happens on a regular basis. You know, and fuel industry, if I got a car that's going to run on 100 miles to the gallon at the very least, you're not going to sell as much fuel.
Right.
And these guys got something, you know, these guys got some skin in the game, so to speak. They need the money that they get for their luxury yachts and their mansions and whatever, pay their employees and all that, and they still want to be able to say that they're wealthy at the end of the day. But regardless of all that, you know, the technology's there available to make these doggone engines run more efficiently to where you don't have to buy so much fuel. And this is why every single time you start talking about this kind of stuff on YouTube or social medias, there will people come up out of the woodwork like roaches and start telling you how stupid you are. Why this isn't going to work? You can't do that. That's against the second law of thermodynamics. Blah, blah, roaches. Blah. Yeah. It's disgusting, man. I can't stand roaches.
Oh, my God. You're trying to kill me. I'm coughing to death here. Don't make me laugh like that.
Well,
that's the program we've had so far. We're poking fun at the idiots out there.
Well, if you're going to say you're going green and you're out there protesting save the trees with a wooden stick and a paper sign.
Paper sign, right. The paper's made out of wood. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Doggone it. Look at all the houses out there. They're built out of trees, man.
Well, really?
Doggone it. You could take build the houses out of hemp fibers, for that matter. You could build a 2x4 out of hemp fibers. You could build a 2x4 out of all kinds of fibers. You could build 2x4s out of plastic, for Pete's sake.
Wait a minute. Plastic comes from fossil fuel.
But if you don't want to burn it, and you just want you to have something that...
All right. Now you're cooking.
See? You're not going to...
It's fossil. It's fossil fuel, okay? Fossil means it was alive at one time, which if it was, it means it's organic.
Yeah.
It means it will rot. There are things in nature that will take care of it, so the EPA is going to fine you $150,000 and put your butt in jail for 20 years because you poured your old engine oil around your fence. But if they don't catch you, it's not illegal, right? Mother Nature's going to get you. She's going to get you. If the EPA doesn't get you, Mother Nature will, because 2 or 3 years later, that fossil fuel, that oil that you poured on your pit pine to kill the grass, is going to turn into fertilizer, and the grass is going to grow 3 times faster, and you're going to be out there with a weed eater 3 times longer. So don't pour the fossil fuel, your fertilizer, around your fence line. Come on.
Well, we mentioned yesterday on the Mad Science Show, I believe, that there is no such thing as waste, literally. Because you burn the firewood in your fireplace, And you got all these ashes. Now you got to figure out what to do with these ashes. Well, some people use it to get their cars unstuck in the wintertime. Some people use it to make soap. And people's out there using them to make batteries and all kinds of tons of uses if you know the chemistry. But either way, you just turned in what would have normally been classified as trash for something, just like the guys over in Europe turning plastic into gasoline. All right, they refined it. What's the plastic made of? Anybody? Bueller?
Hey, when did you say you saw that article in Popular Science about the plastic race engine?
It must have been in like the 70s or 80s, somewhere around in that neighborhood. Why, did you find it?
I think he's reading.
Well, I hope he does.
Hold on, I'm posting. I gotta get back over to the Super Chat to post this link.
But
let me. There we go. They've got an archive. So every single Popular Science magazine that's ever been put out, it's in there. You can probably find that article you were talking about too, Raymond.
Wow, that's a cool link there. I'm going to bookmark that one, man.
Are you talking about the M1 carburetor or the chlorine engine?
The chlorine engine. If it was in Popular Science, you should be able to find it too. The one that I just posted was the V6 turbo all plastic engine for race cars.
The thing is about the chlorine engine.
Where'd you find that?
Popular Science Archive. Just go to popsci.com/archive.
So I ain't crazy. They do exist.
Well, and you can't run around and buy all the magazines and burn them. They'd have to literally write a whole new magazine to fill a slot because every single month is in there. There's none missed.
There you go. Armaco Polymotor Plastic Racing Engine weighs 202 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
It's made by Kyocera ceramic turbo diesel. No cooling system is needed. It takes Makosh Detroit editor oil and sand. Common sense says that plastic metals and ceramics shatter. What? I don't know what they had that in there for. But doggone it, it was there.
Wait a minute. When was this? What year?
That one there.
86.
Huh?
I think it was 86.
86. Now, it's now 2016. So, what's the time difference and we still don't have this engine? Why? Everybody, you can't do that. Why? It's already been done. I've mentioned this once before on this program. I was busy loading a 38-foot, it was an I-beam, a steel I-beam, 38 feet long, it was an 8-inch I-beam, and I'm loading it on my truck and my trailer, and getting ready to pull off, and this kid walks up and says, yeah, that's impossible, that won't work, you can't do that. And I said, okay, son, since you're the expert, does that mean that I need to go back and get the other six that have already taken to the job and bring them back here? Do I have to go back and undo what I've already done because you are the expert telling me that this is impossible? I can't do this? So now that I've already done it six times because you are the expert, ex meaning has been, spurt meaning worthless.
There was a September 1982 one too that said Ford's impossible plastic engine, plastic connecting rod top rest in the hands of the poly motor. It said, I tensed my muscle to lift a component that normally comprised of major portions of the engine weight. I jerked the block clear off the floor with, and I didn't, it stops it there, but basically little effort. You know, they made an engine out of plastic which would reduce the weight, which would reduce the amount of fuel necessary to run the doggone thing and move it down the road, and the doggone thing didn't even have to have a cooling system.
But she said the doggone thing was never actually put on the production line was the doggone thing.
Yeah, that's it. That's it, man.
I'm agreeing with you on the doggone because I'd rather say other things, but we're on the radio show and we need to keep our language clear.
Yeah.
Okay? The doggone thing.
Well, you know, there's times.
The doggone thing ever put in production.
There's times when I feel like being a foul-mouthed heathen because I tell you what, man, it really ticks me off to see that this technology is just going by the wayside. And it wouldn't be so bad if people weren't complaining about the so-called global warming slash climate change slash climate disruption and whatever the tarnation it's going to be next week
when the weather changes. I read a sign in a barbershop one time when I was about 10, 12 years old, and it said, foul language is the efforts of a sin-sick mind trying to express itself forcefully. Well, we're on this radio show, and we're not using foul language. We're trying not to. We want to because nobody's listening. The technology is here. It has been here for a long time, and nobody's using it because nobody wants to take the time to learn.
Well, I'll tell you what. They got some bearings out there, some really super precision bearings that are made out of ceramics. They got some that are made out of plastics. And, man, with this particular deal, if you had the right polymer, you could literally 3D print an engine.
Polytetrafluoroethylene, better known as Teflon, is a plastic. It is, in the Guinness Book of World Records, the most friction-free material known to man.
You know what we got out of that doggone technology? We got cutting boards. And the Glock 9mm.
They know Teflon.
Yeah.
Somebody made a mistake because actually the highest lubricity plastic that's out there is ultra-high molecular weight polyethylene. The reason they use Teflon is because ultra-high molecular weight polyethylene, the toughest of all the polyethylenes, is still not as heat-resistant as Teflon.
There you go.
That's the only difference. It's still in the difference in lubricity is not something you can actually sense with your physical senses. It's a very, very low difference. So,
okay. So what you're talking about here is you don't want to drive a nail with a pipe wrench. You want to use a hammer, and you don't want to try to tighten a piece of pipe with a claw hammer.
Yeah. Well, also that's
the proper plastic for the proper job.
Yeah, that's right. Permanent peak technology.
Right.
When you
if you're rotating something in a sleeve that's not going faster than 300 RPM, then polyethylene is your best bet, your ultra-high molecular weight, because it's actually tougher, too, than the Teflon.
Well,
if you're going to be going 3,000 or 5,000 RPM, then you're going to have to put some Teflon on that, because it's going to get warm no matter what.
Exactly.
Funny thing is, while I was still on that page, I had noticed down at the bottom that they were talking about mixing plastic with the oil so that it would give it a better lubrication.
That actually is not a very good idea because they have to mix really tiny particles and those will end up in the ocean.
Well, that's what they said they were going to do on there. That get back on that page and look at the article.
What is plastic made from? Crude oil. What is crude oil? Fossil fuel. Fossil means? It means it's organic.
Right. Now, listen, though. This is the thing. You have to look at the inner calculation of the atoms together.
Okay.
Crude oil, in the state that it's in, is very easy for nature to break down.
Right.
Most plastics find their way to be broken down one way or another, but polyethylene, which is the most lubricous of those materials, and that's what they used as microbeads in scrubbing solutions for face wash, doesn't break down from hydrochloric acid or any other compounds that animals have to break it down. And it takes quite a while for it to break down from UV damage from the sun. So it's the plastic that's out there in the ocean right now that's polluting it. All the other plastics have degraded and broken down and turned back into something the Earth could use.
Do you remember Duralube? Years ago, there was...
Yeah, that's the fluorine-based... I'm trying to remember.
It's a synthetic oil.
One of them was made with chlorine. Another was made with fluorine. The chlorine, I think, is the Prolong brand. Duralube was the chlorine brand. And then there was something that came before Duralube that Their way of basically trumping that company when Duralube came out was saying, look what happens to your engine if you let that that oil set and run off your engine. Because that synthetic oil that came before was made with nitrogen, and that is a facilitator to oxidize iron. So the second the oil itself component washed away, the nitrogen that was holding the oil on the wall for an extended period of time was now free to expose it to oxygen and would rust the inside of your engine and nothing flat.
All right, well, years ago, when Duralube very first came out, I remember I was at a flea market one time. The guy had a machine there that he was doing an experiment, and he was showing it was a synthetic oil that they had been making. And actually, they have synthetic oils today that I can't remember. It's some sort of Teflon or some mix inside there is what I believe that it gets into the pores of the metal itself and lubricates it. All right, and so they actually put some of this Duralube on a system where they intentionally put down incredible amounts of torque on this thing to try to get it to get hot, to get the friction to tear something up. And they weren't able to do it. They could put the pressure down on it, and this stuff would still stay lubricated.
They didn't pull the oil pan and drain all the oil out of it while it was running?
Well, they did that as well.
Yeah, that's the one right there. All of those oils would do that. As long as the engine is running, all of those synthetics, they lock onto the surface of the atoms in the iron so that it can't be ripped loose. There's always at least one molecule of that oil stuck to the surface of the wall, so it remains lubricated almost indefinitely.
Back in the late 60s, there was a company called Slick 50.
That's the one that would rust the inside of your engine if you let it set and drain off, because eventually the oil would let go, leaving the nitrogen behind.
But I tell you what, that Slick 50 is something else, man.
Oh, yeah, as long as you keep running the vehicle. If you don't store the vehicle away and let it sit, like, in a barn or something for, like, you know, 2 or 3 years, it'll be fine. But if you leave it sitting for, I think actually the limit was, like, 6 months. At that point, then the oil had actually broken free of the nitrogen that was bonding it to your engine.
Right.
So, well, I think the biggest key to point out here is that with the proper chemistry and the proper engineering, you could literally have an engine that will not wear out. You'd have an engine that would run super efficient, that you could literally walk up and put your hand on the doggone thing and it wouldn't get hot. You'd actually have to figure out a way to get your water temperature up hot enough to be able to have heat during the wintertime, you know, because the engine would...
It will take that prolong. Well, actually, and I mean, I say this because I have experience with it. I don't know about the Duralube. It may do it, too. But the Prolong, if you put it in an engine that you've been running for a while and it started getting to where basically it's difficult to start it when it's cold, it will actually bring new life back into it so that you can start it even in the coldest weather, and whenever it's actually running, you get more mile per gallon out of it, too.
Well, there you go, man.
More power, too.
That's the whole key.
I believe the more mile per gallon, because the more power means more miles per gallon.
I wish Muddy was on here, because I would want him to re-explain why it was that he put a solar panel on the top of his truck. Now, I got in an argument with some little know-it-all idiot out here on one of these YouTube videos one day, and he was talking about, well, if you put anything on top of the vehicle, it's going to cause it to be aerodynamic, and so it's going to be inefficient. And I said, dude, have you ever heard of flexible solar panels? Alright, you could build it right into the body, and they make wind tunnels for a reason. You can find out whether it's aerodynamic before you ever even put it on the market. But if you got a solar panel built into the body of the car, and the sun's charging your battery up, and your alternator never kicks on, what's that do to your gas mileage?
That is exactly what Buddy was trying to show. I mean, he knew that it's not aerodynamic. It's going to cause wind friction. But at the same time, it's creating electricity. What's your alternator doing? It's causing friction.
Yeah, it's already inefficient. So
you have to overcome that in order to drive the car.
Yeah, it's already inefficient. So what have you lost? If you got any gain whatsoever by putting that solar panel on there, you see what I mean?
Yes.
But this is where I get so doggone riled up and I want to be a foul-mouthed heathen just like the rest of the knuckleheads out there, because I'm seeing this stuff right here. You're sitting there telling me on one hand that the planet's heating up and we're all going to die and we're all going to run out of water and we're going to die of thirst, and I'm sitting here and I'm looking at the globe and the oceans and I'm saying, well, that's a whole lot of water there, but they said we're thirsty, so, okay.
Wait, you know. You don't want to be a foul mouth either. Well, the thing is, what did I just say? Foul mouth, bad language, cursing, is nothing more than the efforts of a sin-sick mind trying to express itself forcefully. And here's what we've done. This whole show so far has made fun of the idiots that use foul language. And we're trying to tell people in straight, everyday human talk that everybody can understand, look, people, the technology is not only here, it's been here.
Yeah.
All along, it's just been hidden from your eyes. And
you don't need to go into this. You don't need to go into the gutter to get the point across. I mean, come on. Common sense dictates if you're standing next to an ocean and you're dying of thirst, then you just aren't educated enough to understand how things work.
Exactly. You're not educated. You're not stupid.
They're like, well, that's too expensive, man. It costs a lot of money to build them plants. Well, it costs a lot of money to pay carbon tax for something that don't exist, too.
And it cost a lot of money to build Hoover Dam and Lake Mead. But yeah, we did it.
Sure, it's huge.
It did it. And we did it years and years and years ago. And everybody connected to the grid is benefiting.
Yeah.
Because we did it. It was done.
So if we want to save the planet, as much as I hate to say it, I don't think the green people really want to save the planet. I think they just like to get out there and protest and say that they're doing something to save the planet.
Right, right.
Because if you're standing out there with a wooden stick with a paper sign and you're saying save the trees, that's kind of stupid.
Hey, put your sign down and learn something. Take the time that you're protesting to learn what you're protesting about.
At least take Thomas's advice and grab a stick that fell off the tree naturally for your sign. Recycle, man.
Save the whales.
Yeah.
Save the whales. The whales are the ones eating up all the plankton. The plankton is what's feeding the fish.
Well, I can understand the over.
Whoa. Let's kill the whales. Let's kill the whales. Come on. Are you going to save the planet or the whale?
I'd say, look, we need to save them all. We need to be conservative.
Exactly,
man.
Exactly. We need to save them all.
There is a such thing as overfishing.
That's kind of funny what you were saying earlier about the flexible solar. That same magazine that had the plastic engine has an article on flexible solar panels.
See? And that's it, man.
I'm going to change this from the Shaziz Knights of the Round Table to the Shaziz Popular Science.
Yeah. But that's the point I'm trying to make.
It's perfect because we have a resident chemist. Don't we shoot
this? Yeah, that's the point I was trying to make. I'm 50 years old and I saw this article way back in the day. And I knew it existed back then, and I looked around, I was kind of watching for advancements in it to see how this all played out and everything. Because think about a 5-horse Briggs & Stratton go-kart engine, right? You know, that's a pretty heavy little deal. You know, you can pick them up, but they're still kind of heavy. But imagine one made out of plastic that had the same amount of power. Man, now you got a go-kart that's got more horsepower because it don't have to pull around as much weight. You know?
No, it's got the same horsepower, it's just you're using it differently, so you're putting more of the horsepower directly into the car.
Yeah.
Because it's not having to carry its own weight.
Or it could carry a heavier kid.
Right.
Considering what's been going on lately.
What's happening today?
Yeah.
They're heavy because they're eating junk food, right?
Mm-hmm.
We need a lighter engine so we can carry all these fat kids around. the show. This is fantastic, man.
And
I said something kind of rude one time. I have to confess, there was a radio show going on. I actually called in. I think it was a Chris Baker show. I actually called in one time because it was driving me insane because they called them Utopians, and there was a guy out there called Utopian Bill, and he'd call in there and he'd talk about all these things about saving the planet and this and that, and he was just being really ridiculous about what he was talking about. But I called in one time and I cracked a joke and said, "How do you find a truckload of Utopians?" And got Chris Baker said, "How's that?" I said, "Just look for the truck with the fat kid in the back."
There you go. Yeah,
I know that's kind of rude, but it's true, man. You know, it's not that fat kids, you know, don't deserve respect. I mean, you want them to be healthy. You want them to live long, fruitful lives. And when they're eating trash, you know, from the supermarket, and it is trash, go read it. It's like a chemistry set. If you ever need any chemistry, go to the doggone supermarket and get your chemistry. It's there.
Yeah.
You know?
It really is.
And if you're feeding that into the body that's normally supposed to be eating healthy stuff, you know, vegetables that aren't sprayed down with bug spray or genetically modified or whatever, and then you're wondering why everybody's sick these days, and everything's like loaded down with sugars and salts and tastes good, tastes great, man. But what's it doing to your body? The same thing could be said with the fuel systems in your car. What's the crud they're putting in your car? You know? Do you know how many detergents and stuff they stick up in some of these fuels?
Really?
Now, what's that doing to the atmosphere? I'd be more concerned about the detergents that they're putting in the fuels to clean out the carbon, which they wouldn't have to clean out if they were running that doggone thing efficiently. You wouldn't have carbon buildups inside your cylinders. When you get carbon buildup on top of the pistons and in your cylinder walls, number one, it's going to eventually, that carbon's going to break loose and it's going to spit out the exhaust. It's going to plug up your catalytic converter at some point. Your catalytic converter's going to get hot. Your engine's going to overheat and you're going to blow a head gasket.
Wait a minute. You said number one, but then you talked about six different things. And
yeah.
Number 250 is so far down the line, nobody ever thinks about it. If your engine carbon's up, it's going to wear out.
Well, yeah.
Sell you another engine.
My mom.
They are going to sell you another engine.
My mom.
Profit, because they're not telling you everything.
My mom found a trustworthy mechanic, right? How she did this, I don't know, because there are some good ones out there that don't. They're not out to make money. My mom took her truck. She had a Ford pickup truck, a little half ton. And she took it to the deal because it was running rough. And she said, "I can't understand. It's had fuel change, oil change, all the proper maintenance, whatever." All right. And the mechanic looked it over, and he took one of the spark plugs out and looked down inside the cylinder and stuff. And he says, "Let's go for a ride." And so he gets out there, and mom's in the passenger seat. You know, they're all seat belted in. And he just drops it to the floor, man. I mean, he hammers the crud out of it. He runs the crap out of her truck. She's freaking out. What are you doing? What you doing? You're going to tear the truck up. He says, "No, watch this." And after a while, she saw a big old black crud of smoke come blowing up out of the exhaust, and the truck started running good again.
Uh-huh.
And he said, "You must be a really safe driver." And she said, "Yeah, I do. I do the speed limit. I drive, you know, baby my truck and all that." You know, that's why she got so excited whenever he was, you know, hopping on it. But what deal was, over the years of her driving at a certain speed and the carbon building up inside there, it basically created a lip inside the cylinder where that cylinder wasn't making it all the way up, and that lip is what was... could eventually damage the rings in the piston. But all he did was go out there and run the crap out and blow the carbon out of the cylinders and basically out of the exhaust, and the doggone thing run perfect. He didn't charge
anybody. Are you trying to give people speeding tickets?
No, but that's what this was back in right around about...
Wait, you don't have to do that. Well, that's it. As far as I'm concerned, the most powerful thing on the face of this planet is water.
Yeah.
Okay, you don't need to run your engine and then throw a rod through the block.
Well, now they use water to inject water down there, and they use it to steam clean the engine.
Right. What you do is you put a little piece of paper. Don't cover the whole daggone radiator. You cover a small portion of the radiator to cause the engine to get warm. You let it sit there and idle. You watch your temperature gauge. And when it really gets hot, you take some water and just dribble. You don't pour it. You dribble it in the carburetor. And that water, as it goes inside of that hot engine, and the piston comes up and the fire hits it, it explodes into steam and busts all that carbon loose on your engine.
Yeah, well, that's, see, you got to remember, when this story took place, this was back around about 1980 to 82, somewhere around about. And so it was an older mechanic that knew about engines, and that's before they started steam cleaning the pistons.
Right, there you go.
Yeah, so that's how they did it back in the day.
Carbonated water, how it would affect it, because... Well, you just basically described is how they clean grills, too. They get the grill good and hot, and then they pour water on it, and it busts all the stuff that's on the surface off of it.
Right.
And if you're in a hurry, and it's got excess crud on there, it's going to be really hard to get off of there. If you use carbonated water instead, it'll actually remove even more of it. It just works a whole lot better.
Well, I'm glad you said that, because I got a barbecue that needs to be cleaned up. I'm going to do that.
Oh, but man.
You know, here you go. That example about my mom's car, you know, that's a true story. That was back in the 80s, and that's how they figured out back then, you know. And a lot of the engines that got tore up was because, you know, either somebody was driving it, you know, responsibly and not drag racing, and it built up some carbon up in there. And basically, at certain points, when that carbon gets built up in there and the ring pops it at the wrong deal, you know, it knocks that ring, bends the ring, and then it starts to leak a little bit of oil around the pistons, which causes the thing to smoke. You know, once an engine starts to smoke, everybody assumes that the engine's automatically toast. But it's not. A ring job, cylinders, or valves, or whatever. See what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But if you know about the doggone internal combustion engine, and you know a little bit of basic science, and you know how to burn fuels properly, you don't have the carbon emissions, you don't have the carbon buildup, so there's no reason to put all kinds of God knows what kind of stuff that they're putting in there, detergents that they're putting in that engine. That's coming out into the air. All right? Has anybody measured to see what kind of fumes are actually coming out of exhaust as somebody who's running premium unleaded? Anybody? I highly doubt it. Man, you guys get quiet easy. You must be like in brain lock or something.
Well, the microphone on
just tired of being thrown under the bus.
Oh, well, left me hanging out to dry. That's your retaliation for being thrown
right
under the bus.
That's right. Retaliation. I tried to be a gentleman, okay? My microphone is too sensitive. I mean, if a gnat breaks wind 6 feet from my microphone, you guys hear it. And I needed the ice with my ice water, all right? So I muted my mic. I was trying to be a gentleman.
Well, that's good, because that gnat deal in a sensitive mic could sound like a cannon going off in my... Yeah. Anyway.
Sensitive microphone. Wow.
So, basically, what we've showed you here on Knights of the Roundtable so far in this show is that... If you get out there and you get proactive in your communities with a little bit of knowledge under your belt, where you could actually go to there, talk to these people who want to charge you carbon tax for driving your vehicles, you could say, look, here's the thing. You guys will want to charge we the people for something that you put on the market legally for us to buy to use to get to and fro. But now you want to charge us even more for the usage of that because you say that it is causing this effect over here with the climate, which is not true. But in reality, if you want to get somebody to clean up the environment, you need to focus this, if you're going to be stealing this tax money from us, you need to focus this tax money towards lobbying the auto industries to build the things that they already are capable of building. And it ain't because they can't build it, it's because nobody wants to buy it. Well, who's going to pay $50,000 to $100,000 or more for an electric car when they can go out and buy a gasoline engine?
The thing is, the electric car is cheaper to build.
An electric car is going to be cleaner. It's going to be probably more powerful because some of these engines that they got in these electric cars, like the Tesla car, man, that thing's incredible.
Actually, world speed record is held by an electric vehicle.
Yes.
It was using, I think, what, 3,000 D-cell batteries, and it drained them in like a few in like 15, 20 seconds.
Yeah, the land speed record for an electric car, the last I heard, was like 245 miles an hour using nickel-cadmium battery packs and wasn't putting any energy back into the car. Imagine if they'd had a charging system on that. Yeah, they could have probably busted 300 miles an hour. Because those motors will go as fast as those bearings will hold out, you know. The faster you get going, the easier it is to move it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's a motorcycle out there called the Zero, you know, and it's like $20,000 to buy one. I'd love to have one. It's an all-electric motorcycle. Looks like, it's cool looking. It kind of looks like the Kawasaki Ninja. But, they don't sell a lot of them. You don't see a lot of them. You know, I found it by accident one time. I took a picture of it because, you know, I'll probably be the closest I ever get to one of those Zero motorcycles is that picture.
You know?
But, heck, if I had an opportunity to even finance one, I would go out and do it. That's the thing, man. But the technology's there. A super fast motorcycle that run off of electric. They got cars out there all electric. And all hollering about how the batteries are too doggone expensive. And why is that? Because guys like Robert Murray Smith showing them how to use graphene technology to make even better batteries and capacitors.
I wouldn't say that's why, because he's giving that information away for the most part.
Well, why hasn't it been implemented? You know? That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
NASA, you know, God rest their souls. Or bless their souls.
At least you didn't say bless their soul.
Yeah, whatever.
Bless their heart.
Bless their heart or whatever. In 1969. You know, behave yourselves. Doggone it.
I did.
In 1969, they went to the moon, okay? That's what the story said. They had a suit that was able to allow these spacemen to get out of the ship, go out into the moon, and wander around for a few hours. Now, this suit was capable of, because if you understand anything about space, space is colder than heck, and it's hotter than heck. It is extreme temperature difference because you don't have things like shade trees and you don't have like things like ozone and layers of magnetic field to basically keep out bad radiation. So when you're in the sun, you are in the sun, period. Alright, when you're in the cold, in the shadow, you're in the cold, period. I mean, it could go from several hundred degrees above to several hundred degrees below instantaneously. That's how radical it is. But they had a power supply unit and a battery pack that would allow them for 2 hours to basically be able to rapidly change from hot to cold to keep that temperature inside there, the environment inside that suit, keep that man from freezing or frying. Now, doggone it, if they can do that back in 1969, and here it is the year 2016, and we can't do better than that now, we got issues, man.
Yeah, I was wondering what word you were going to use to describe that.
Yeah.
We got issues.
I wouldn't say issues. I'd say more like subscriptions.
More like what?
Subscriptions.
Okay.
Not issues, whole subscriptions.
How about lack of knowledge?
Well, nowadays all they do to give you to cope is prescriptions. Well,
you get an issue a month from a magazine, but if you get a subscription, that means basically you're getting the issues all year long.
Oh, yeah, I see where you went with that. That's, yeah, that's brilliant.
Once you explain it, it makes sense.
But the thing is, man, we got, if they was able to do what they done there, and they went clear to Pluto with the technology they got there, we know about thorium.
Why are they sharing this knowledge? I mean, after all, who's paying for it?
That's why I give NASA such a rash. We're paying tax money for them to do all the experiments, and the technologies that come into out of there are, at very best, if at all, trickling out into the public.
Right.
And there's yet you got...
But they're not telling us how it's done.
Yeah, and yet you got representatives that will go out there and preach bogus science while they're being backed by NASA... Which is, in my mind, it's like Pinocchio. You know, Pinocchio with a fat credit card that is paid for by the people. And now they want to charge the people yet even more money who's already paid taxes for the information and the technology that they develop through that program. Now they want to charge even more money because they say that by you driving that car that they sold legally on the market, and by you using the fuel that they sold legally on the market, that the EPA says is all right, that everybody said was all right, you're buying it, you go to the gas station, you paid for the car, you paid for the gas, not only do you got to pay taxes continuously on the same car that you already paid for, but you got to pay for licensing fees, you got to pay for insurance, and you got to pay for gasoline, and then you got to pay tax on top of the gasoline, and now they want more. Please, sir, can I have some more?
Yeah, they're not asking.
Yeah.
They're not asking. Please, sir, can I have... Oh, wait a minute. Please, sir, can I have more? You're asking. They don't ask.
And then what did the sir say? More? He wants more. You know? And that's the same snooty attitude that you get when you go to the doggone representatives. You try to talk to them about what you disagree with in the common sense and that the bogus science, and they'll laugh at you and disrespect you and pretty much say that same thing to your face. Because they think they know it all, but they don't.
They don't know anything.
Well, if
there are some really great laws out there to protect people. But there are some really, really stupid laws that were passed only because somebody complained. Like, for example, the old lady that went to the city council and complained because her next-door neighbor had a windmill, and the noise from the windmill was upsetting her cat. The old biddy didn't even realize her cat was in season, and it was natural for her to whine and cry like that. She was crying for a mate.
Well, the EPA classified CO2 as toxic waste, essentially. That's it. Now, the Environmental Protection Agency is saying something that comes out of your mouth is toxic. So everybody needs to just shut up, not talk. Don't breathe. Hold your breath. We got to save the planet.
Hey, we need to start with the political debates then.
Yeah. But doggone it, man. People got to get educated. They got to understand that these technologies exist. They have existed. They've always existed. And the people out there who are in charge, they don't want this technology out there. They don't want to save the planet like they keep on preaching you. You know, it's like this. You can go out there and you can touch on people's heartstrings. You can talk about saving the children. Okay, we got to save the children. These children over here starving. These are getting bombed and this and that. We got to go over and bomb the terrorists so that they can get rid of, you know, they don't hurt the children. Well, and it's the process of drone bombing the doggone terrorists. You kill some children and, oh, well, that's okay. That's collateral damage. That happens in war. That's kind of terrible. But we save more children by doing that than not. You see the hypocrisy?
Mm-hmm.
I ain't got no reason to be upset, now do I? Because common sense is just flowing free like a butterfly in the wind, brother. Everybody's got it.
You're making me think of that song. Fly like an eagle, man.
Fly like an eagle to the sea.
Careful. Don't want the copyright people to come after you for singing for somebody else's song or something.
I don't even care about the copyright people.
Copyright infringement.
You know,
yeah, if they can arrest you for one thing, they'll find something else to arrest you for. Most laws are made to make criminals. They're not actually made to fix things.
Well, yeah.
unless an underpopulation at the prison system is a problem they're trying to fix, you know.
Well, you know what? If you think about what's going on out there. You'll have some lady like Sally Struthers or somebody come out there and talking about the sick baby overseas and about feeding them and all that kind of stuff. And then she'll end up going back to her mansion, and she'll end up having all this kind of, you know, good foods and medical care and all that kind of stuff.
And send nothing to those children.
Yeah. Now, if I was filthy, stinking rich like Sally Struthers, I would be broke real shortly because I would distribute that money equally amongst all the people that were in need. I would do it. I'm serious. I would freaking do it. Because how could I go to sleep at night in a mansion knowing that some little baby was sleeping over there in the doggone dirt, man? Flies on his face and big bloated out belly from starving. If I knew that was going on and I had the access to get there and do something about it, and I couldn't drive around in a dang limousine knowing that baby was over there.
Wait a minute. That's just it. You're not rich because that's the way you are. These people are rich because they don't want to spend their money and save the children. They want you and me and Thomas and other people that are not rich to use their money to save the children. But the thing is, for every time somebody donates $100, they take $99 of it to help pay their light bill in their mansion, and they take $1 and give it to somebody else who's going to take 50 cents out of that dollar for themselves so they can pay somebody else 25 cents so that person will give the kid 10 cents.
Well, Raymond, you hit the key. You hit the nail on the head. The whole thing is, when it comes to saving the planet, it ain't the government going to save the planet. The government's always telling you, you gotta save the planet. You send us money, and we'll help you save the planet.
Give us the money, and we'll help you. But the thing is, you give them the money, and they don't help. They put it away in their bank account.
Well, right now we're sitting on a ton of technology to where we can literally build super efficient cars that are running clean and give them everything that they keep on telling us that we need. Every time a politician gets elected and says, "Well, I'm a green guy, I'll come up there and I'll save the planet and I'll disrupt the coal industries and the oil industries," and once he gets in office, the first thing he does is take a bribe from the coal industry, and you never hear another thing about him saving the planet. Then when you go back there and ask him, "Look, hey, when you got elected, you said you were going to save the planet. We still look like heck."
Let me ask you a question, and I've asked this question before. Why would anyone spend $350 million to get a job that pays less than $500,000 a year and only lasts 4 years?
Because they're getting rich, man. They're getting paid.
We've only had one president. One. That, as president, refused to take a salary for doing his job.
Well, the Fukushima plant blew up several years ago. All right? Now, supposedly it's still dumping doggone radioactive water into the ocean, which would raise the temperature up in that area because it's radioactive water and heat the water surrounding it. And so eventually it'll dilute itself, but how long would it take to actually finally get to where it's not no longer dumping radiation into the water? Now, you can look at this one or two ways. You can either go back to Galen Windsor's nuclear scare scam video and study that, how he used to drink water out of the cooling pool just to prove it was safe, and how they used to mix this stuff with bare hands. And he even showed where he had ate some of this stuff to just to show, "Look, I'm still alive. I'm not dead," you know. But, okay, now, on the government side of the deal, they wouldn't want you to know you could pick this stuff up with your bare hands, because then everybody could have access to the materials to make nuclear weapons. And you know, when you got the biggest gun in town, then you're the baddest boy in town, then ain't nobody going to mess with you. And if anybody and everybody can get a hold of it, then you got problems. All right, so it's regulated. So they bury it and waste it. And if this stuff is dumping into the ocean and doing as much damage as everybody's afraid that it's going, that's happening, and if it's killing off the doggone ocean, why isn't the government over there right now doing everything they can? Because the clock is ticking. When the ocean dies, the people die. The food chain will collapse all the way down. All right?
Yes.
And when the ocean dies, the people die. So if it was as bad as what the people out there are talking about, and the government ain't on it, then I have to be on the fence, and I'm kind of being skeptical. Wait a second. One of two things is right. Either Galen Windsor was right, or the people on the other side is right, and the government just don't care. You see what I mean?
Yep.
You can't have it both ways. Either the planet's dying because of it, or Galen Windsor was right, and it's not as dangerous as they said it was. In which case, everyone could have had a nuclear reactor in your yard, and nobody would ever had to pay a doggone electric bill, because all you'd have to do is find some uranium, refine it into plutonium, and make you a doggone super hot reactor out in your yard. And if thorium is correct, then you didn't even need the super hot reactor. You could use the thorium. And if it's only got a half-life of 300 years, that means 300 years without a light bill. You see what I mean?
The thing is, the half-life of uranium is not 300 years. They told you in the beginning, when they first came out with the atomic bomb and this, that, and other, the half-life was 5,000 years. Well, let me tell you something. It has not been 5,000 years since we bombed Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Well, I know, and I stood there in 1984.
Right now, thriving with three times the population.
I was in Hiroshima in 1984 and early, it was both of them. I went to both Hiroshima and Nagasaki in the same week in 1984 to the museums, and I stood there at ground zero.
You're still alive because you died from radiation poisoning. Now, who's lying to who?
Well, that's the question, you know. And these are things that the average Joe needs to ask questions. And if somebody's questioning NASA's technology and whether we did or didn't go to the moon, you know, you paid for it by your tax money and everybody else paid for it, so it should be an open kind of disclosure. Now, I can understand certain technologies you wouldn't want to get out there to the, you know, the so-called enemies of the state or whatever, you know, terrorist kind of deal. But technologies that could be useful, if nuclear power was safe enough to where you could use it in your home. People talk about the fear of radiation, but yet in every single metal detector out there, there's americium, which is radioactive. In carbon monoxide detectors, there's americium in there, which are it's radioactive. Alright, so you've got radioactive stuff in your doggone house. Back in the old days, they used to have this glass that you put under a UV light would glow because it had radioactivity in it. So, you know, talk about save the planet, then you need to do it. You see what I mean?
Put your sign down, learn what you're talking about, and then do something about it. Don't just preach to other people. You need to come here and help me save the planet. Help you? You're not asking for help. You're asking somebody else to do it for you.
That's it. Plant a tree.
That's the government. They want the government to do it for them. No, people got to get together and do it your dang old self.
Plant a tree, for Pete's sake.
Really? Save a tree.
If it makes you feel better, get out and plant one. Nature will take back whatever you don't use. That's all there is to it. There ain't no element that man has ever made that nature cannot deteriorate.
Beautiful horses.
And if you think that you're tougher than nature, well, I'm sorry to tell you, you're not. Because while these guys are out there manipulating weather and doing fractal drilling and they're wondering why there's earthquakes and there's wondering why there's sinkholes popping up, you take the hydraulic pressure out from underneath your house.
Sinkholes don't pop up, they pop down.
Well, down, whatever, you know. When you shut a window, does it go up or down?
Really?
Shut the door, yeah. Man. I don't know. Either way, the simple is, if your house is sitting on a water table and somebody pumps the water out from underneath your house, then the hydraulic pressure is no longer there to hold dirt up and your house pops down in the hole. Imagine that. All right, common sense dictates if you stick your finger in the fire and it hurt, then don't do that. Doggone it. That's all I'm saying.
Lord of mercy.
Man, we got everything we need, every single answer. We got brilliant minds that know chemistry, mechanics, physics, and all that kind of stuff. And you got brilliant individuals that will go out there And as far as I'm concerned, they think they're brilliant. But they will go out and find somebody who is a flat-out genius and call them as stupid as they can, you know, foul-mouthing them and everything. Oh, well, that ain't what my school book said. I sat down one time and I talked to this young lady that was talking about global warming and climate change. And she was there up and down, oh, it's real. No, it's real. And I sat down there and I explained to her in graphic detail how CO2 works. I showed her the periodic table. I showed her the weight of the element and, you know, the difference. Basically explained it in scientific deal. But you know what? She held on to that. No, you're wrong. That's not what the scientists say and all this kind of stuff. And she just left up out of her madder than she was when she first came in. But she flat out refused to listen to common sense and basic science. CO2 is heavier than oxygen. That is why it displaces oxygen. It pushes oxygen away. So if you walk up into a pool of CO2, you can't breathe. Carbon monoxide, which is one oxygen atom connected to one carbon atom, is smaller and it can fit down in your respiratory system. Therefore, you get carbon poisoning. Anybody get that beside me?
Actually, the
difference between carbon dioxide and carbon monoxide, though, is not that it's smaller. It's that the carbon monoxide is not fully reacted, whereas the carbon dioxide is fully reacted. So you breathe in carbon monoxide, it reacts with your blood and locks onto it, forming a molecular component on the chain of molecules that your blood cells are made out of, right on the receptors that the oxygen normally sticks to. And the body can't remove it because it can't get past that carbon.
Yep, there you go. And then you die of carbon poisoning.
Mm-hmm.
Man, you don't got to shove a sharp pencil in your eye to find out that it's going to hurt. You look at that sharp pencil and think about it. When your buddy poking in the eyeball with his finger, it hurt.
Well, listen, man, also for another correction, you can breathe. You don't stop being able to breathe if you're in carbon dioxide. You can breathe all day long. The problem is you got to have some oxygen in order to keep breathing. So at some point you're gonna suffocate because you're not getting any oxygen.
I don't want to tick you off or anything, but you're not gonna breathe all day long.
Right? Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Well, you could breathe it off and on all day long as long as you switch out and get some oxygen in between there to reoxygenate your body.
Exactly.
All right.
I'm saying is you can pull a breath of carbon dioxide. The problem is though, it's not gonna benefit you any more than eating plastic steaks all day long. You know, like feed a dog a rubber bone.
Yeah.
You know, when I pour a Pepsi or a Coke into a large glass and it doesn't fill it all the way up and it foams and I've got ice in there and it foams all up, all that foam is carbon dioxide. And I've noticed that when I tilt it to my mouth, if I breathe in, it's kind of cool, you know? But it's carbon dioxide, and I know my body doesn't need it, but it feels great for a split second. But then what I do is I exhale, blow that out into that cup, and it clears all that carbon dioxide away.
Well, either way,
one
guys,
split second was really great.
Either way, if you're walking through a doggone parking lot and people starting their cars up and leaving, you think you ain't breathing some of that crud in anyway? You know, when a car is going down the road, there's microscopic pieces of rubber that's flying off of that tire. Tires wear out, you know.
Yep.
You're breathing that in. And so there's a lot of crud out there in the auto industry that goes unnoticed. Nobody talks about little microscopic pieces of tire going down in your lungs or whatever. Now, this lady was like getting all irate one time when I was younger. I was out there, I was walking across the parking lot, and she's like, "You need to put that cigarette out because secondhand smoke kills," while she was getting up into an SUV and starting it up. And I told that lady, it's flat out, I said, "Lady, you turn that doggone car off and I'll put this cigarette out because I'm going to die faster sucking on your exhaust fumes than you are smelling my smoke."
Hey, wait a minute. That brings up something important. I once heard, put your brain in gear before you release the clutch on your tongue.
Yeah. But that's it. The whole save the planet issue, the whole green going green deal, I understand working with nature. All right? That's a good thing because nature will kick your butt if you don't. And if you pee and poo in your own fishbowl, then and your gills start to burn and you die, well, then whose fault is it? Is it nature's fault because you were stupid? Come on, people. You pay hey, your streams.
We discussed that yesterday off air.
Yeah,
about peeing and pooping on my land.
Well, look, man, I want to go into your plumbing problems. What I want to say is this. If the EPA busts a hole in the mine and dumps millions of gallons of rusty-looking crud down in the doggone river, and it goes floating down, and they tell the Native Americans down at the end of the doggone stream, oh, just wait for the crud to float by, and then you can start drinking the water again. Something ain't right with that picture, man.
Yeah, right, because they took taxpayers' money to store this bad material, but then they turn right around and do exactly what they're going to fine you for. They turn it loose.
Yeah, the Environmental Protection Agency. Let's say that one more time. Environmental Protection Agency. Now, they're supposed to protect the environment. I would say that
the question is, which environment? Are we just talking about protecting the environment inside a bank account somewhere?
Yeah. Right.
That's it. I'll bet that thing's got clean air filters inside that bank so the banker don't get a case of freaking black lung.
They'll be sure to make sure their money is properly counted, you know?
Yeah.
Right. Oh, man, come on.
The environment in some rich person's mansion, you know?
This has been a great program.
Practice what you preach, man.
Yeah, my question is Monsanto eating the same food that comes from the seeds that they sell?
I'm gonna try something. Okay. I'm gonna try something cool for a second here. I'm gonna put a song on while we're talking. I'm gonna see if it'll come through both.
Okay.
I'm playing in the background while we're talking. Fly like an eagle.
What's wrong is how do you make that profit?
Mm-hmm.
I do a lot of business deals every year, a lot. And I'm extremely adamant about making sure that each and every person, no matter how many or how few they are, everyone at the end of the business deal is satisfied. Not just satisfied, but happy.
That's how you gotta do it, man.
Yes.
That's all there is to it.
Fly like an eagle, let my spirit carry me, man. You know what I'm saying?
I hear nothing.
I can hear it on my side. I don't know if they can hear it. Hey, let me know out there in the chat room if you can hear Fly Like an Eagle going on in the background while we're talking.
Shazam, I just figured out why you don't have thought bubbles.
Because of my singing?
Exactly. You scare them all away.
Oh, man.
I'm not picking on you.
Don't quit my day job is what you just said.
Hey, if you can't pick on your friends, who can you pick on?
I don't think I can talk to Raymond anymore.
That's right.
I don't think I can talk to Raymond anymore. He done cracked on me.
I love Shazam because he got a great brain, but man, he cannot carry it.
Oh well, I'm about to show you better than that. I'll have to play my song. Doggone, what the heck the name of that doggone song?
Keep singing on the air, and you're gonna get Gregory in here.
No, we're gonna lose business. What we're gonna do?
All right, hold on. I gotta find it now. What the heck was the name of the song?
How are you going to get listeners to keep making their ears bleed?
You know, Shazam, I think he loves it because he takes it so well.
Oh, okay, I got it.
I'm glad you guys don't pick on me any more than you do, because I cry easy.
Y'all picked on me a couple times, not very often.
Oh, I remember now. The song's called I Can Dream. Alright. Doggone it. I don't even have it right there.
I need to pick on a hardware store. I don't have a... I'm not gonna die. I don't have that I need. Need.
Silas.
What's that?
If I paid for your plane ticket, would you fly down here and spend a week with me?
I had to make sure things were sorted on my end up here before I could do that, but I don't see any reason why not.
I'd like for you to get a list of some projects you'd like to work on, have you come here and use my shop and all my tools, just so I can spend some time with you.
Right. Hey, we could try that graphene trick.
Yes, that would, I would love that.
All right, Raymond.
Okay.
Now you cracked on my singing. Alright, so what we're going to do here, I need you to get on the radio player there, and I need you to listen to this song that I'm getting ready to play.
Okay.
Alright, this is me singing. Alright.
Wait a minute, how do I get on the radio show?
Doggone it, you don't even know where the superchat.html is?
No.
Control C. I'm going to send you a link in the...
Oh, don't do that. Never send a link.
Yeah, that last time I picked on a link, I got... All right, you see that link inside the Skype chat? Click on that. That takes you to the Super Chat room.
Okay.
All right, now the radio player is up at the top. All you have to do is push play. All right, everybody, this is O'Shaziz singing a song that he wrote and produced. And
Now you see why he's called Shaziz the Terrible.
Yeah. All right. Now you got to listen too, Thomas. All right. And when we come back, you got to tell me what you think. All right. This is a song called I Can Dream by Shaziz.
Yeah, link inside the Skype chat.
All right, here we go.
I got it.
I'm
tree. Sing me a song to warm my heart. Show me hope for a brand new start. Hold my hand and I'll hold yours too. Together we'll dream in the sky so blue. We'll fly to a place where angels dance. The breeze so loud that do an old romance. I can dream, I can dream, I can dream.
Thomas's song, it'll be on the podcast. Do, fly like an eagle.
to the future.
All right, and we're back. Let me put this all into perspective here. See, one man doesn't make a band. Now, there are one-man bands out there, and like Raymond said, by myself, I suck, man. That's it. You know, but that's, you know, just a touch of what could be done. Imagine if I had the right band behind me, and instead of using digital drums, I could have, that guitar playing, by the way, was me as well. All the guitar playing and all the singing you heard was me. The drums were digital. They were off of a keyboard. And so, you know, it was all slapped together on a 4-track recorder. Yeah, sure, I can play the drums. But I can play the drums, I can play the keyboard, I can play the piano. Actually, there's some videos on my YouTube channel of me doing just that. But yeah, it's not.
The thing is, you can't do it all by yourself.
Yeah, that's the deal.
By yourself, you suck. By myself, I suck. But if we get enough people with enough skill behind us, we can make a beautiful band.
Well, and that's the whole point that I've been trying to get along on this show. As many times as we've done this show, I've been trying to get everyone out there is a piece of the puzzle. By yourself, you've got skills and talents and tools, but together you got a team, and that's how you need to do it. You need to network, like Thomas said, in your own communities. Put these people together and build the things that we know exist already, and prove the technology to yourselves and each other, and use it. Doggone it, the only way you're going to get in trouble for copyright is if you try to sell it. You know?
Right. Yeah.
If you're using it, they can't do nothing to you. As long as you ain't selling it, you ain't making no money on it. A copyright only protects you for so long anyway. And then if you change it up some, you can start manufacturing. That's why you'll see one product come out at one time, and they're the only ones that carry it. But then later on, you'll see things that are kind of like it, but they're a little slightly different, and multiple companies are selling it. But if you're not selling it at all, you're not infringing on their copyright. You're just making it, and you're sharing them amongst each other. You know, that's the key. You got to learn about what all these things, these terminologies mean, so you know how to work around them. There's a loophole in everything. That's why the government gets by with so much.
They deliberately put the loopholes in there so they can.
Like Congressman Bongwater said, you know, elect me and I'll make everything legal so there ain't nothing I can be prosecuted for. You know? Legalize it all. And go to jail for it.
He was a stand-up comedian.
Yeah, Congressman Bongwater, I would vote for him just because he flat out told you the truth. He said, elect me and I'll screw you on taxes. That's what he said.
Yeah.
And he said when he saw his illegal alien maid sweeping dirt under the rug, he gave her a raise because he likes the way she thinks.
Oh, man.
If you ain't seen my Congressman Bongwater videos, jump over there. Share them with your friends. Congressman Bongwater, it's funny. Remember my magic trick, Thomas?
No.
I put the nose and the glasses on and I said, well, watch this. And then I pulled the nose and glasses off and I looked the same.
I didn't think that was a magic trick. I don't think that qualifies.
Now you see
it. That sounds like a political magic trick.
Now you see it. Now you see it again.
Yeah. It's like their magic trick of we're going to do a disappearing act. You see your wallet? Now you see it? Now you don't. There he goes.
Well, if you hold your doggone elected officials' feet to the fire, you'll get things done. If you don't go to your community, your town hall meetings and stuff like that, then they're going to pass things, and you ain't got no reason to complain. Because you didn't say nothing. It's called implied consent, and that's one of the loopholes that the government used to screw you over, is that they will run something in a small, tiny, little microscopic ad in a little unknown newspaper, and that's public.
Are you pulling from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy?
No, is that in there?
Oh, man. Well, it was on display, yeah, down in the basement behind three locked doors that I had to have a special ID to get through to see.
Yeah, but it was advertised to the public, so nobody complained. Nobody saw it. Nobody said nothing, so it must be all right.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah.
That's why you got to post no trespassing signs if you don't want people walking across your yard, because, you know, after years and years of them walking across the yard, it's a public path. That's it. That's how the law works. There's loopholes and loopholes in there, and that's how these guys they skirt the tax system. The same tax system that would kick your door in and bash you upside the noggin and haul you out to jail for not paying taxes, they figured out ways around those doggone taxes. So you don't pay your taxes, you go to jail, but they don't pay their taxes. That's it.
They get a write-off. Yeah, they get a write-off.
You know, the thing is, politics.
Oh, you didn't pay your taxes. You must be poor. Let's give you some more money.
Yeah.
Right. And they're going to buy your vote, because that's exactly the way it was explained to me about 6 or 8 months ago. The reasons we have the politicians that we do is because there are more people that vote for a living than there are people that work for a living that vote.
We got the best politicians that money can buy.
And there you go. There we go.
Now, I say we don't buy them. We ask them if they want the job, and if they want the job under the stipulations that they're going to be under scrutiny, and they don't get paid for the job, it's volunteer. How many of those same individuals do you think are going to take the job?
I take it. If they don't,
pay them until the job is done.
Yeah.
If we don't like how the job's done, then they don't get paid at all. In fact, they might have to pay us for doing a poor job.
Yeah, and have them do a quality of job inspection. When the job's done, if they missed a spot, then they got to clean that spot up before the paycheck comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Man, they do that to you. Doggone it, if you go up there and do somebody's roof on the house and you did something crooked, they'll make you tear the doggone thing off and fix it before you get paid.
Wait a minute. 95% of all politicians are ex-lawyers. Now, the thing is, I'm a contractor, and you're right. If I do a job and I don't do it correctly, that person legally does not have to pay me until I fix it and do it right.
Yep.
However, I have a license that says I am a contractor. I am a construction worker. I have a license. Did you know that there is no such thing as a license to be a lawyer?
Well, they got this bar you got to join, man. You got to go to the bar.
Wait, I'm saying they get the paper that says they can legally practice law. So, therefore, they're only practicing. Therefore, if they don't succeed, you still have to pay them.
But my point was they become a member of the club. Exactly. The same club that's beating you over the head, they're a member of.
They're practicing.
Yeah.
They're a club. They're like a small ball team that plays for free.
But either way, you know, as a member of the club, they have their own secret hand signs and signals and language. And if you don't understand the club's language, then you get screwed in court. Now, the attorney comes in here and says, well, we'll pay double the fine, and you just don't charge us with this. And everybody says, oh, yeah, that's all right, but you just paid double the doggone fine. That attorney's supposed to go in there and make sure you don't have to pay nothing.
Right.
You know, he's supposed to be out for your best interest, but he just sold out to the club. Hey, wink, wink, nod, nod, I know you're getting a new jacuzzi, Mr. Judge. We'll just give you a little bit extra money, and you just forget about this. Doggone it, that's how your system works, people. And until you understand that, until you get out there in your local communities and listen to what these people are saying, then you're just going to get surprised whenever your tax bill comes in there. I'm going to be the first person to ever go to jail for not paying a carbon tax. Because if I see anything remotely resembling carbon tax on any kind of government bill coming my direction, I'm going to reject it. I'm going to send it right back. Return the sender. And I ain't going. I ain't going back.
Maybe you can do what they were doing whenever gas company here was caught basically ripping people off. They were saying, oh, because of the winter was harder than we expected, we had to go ahead and pay for more at a higher premium to make sure you guys had enough, right? And actually, they were buying from a company that owned the company that they had, you know, were buying from. So it was basically two companies owned by the same group of people.
I'll tell you one better than that. There was one time that because of adverse weather, they have an option. The meter reader has an option. They can actually estimate your bill from previous months. They can estimate your bill, and supposedly it works itself out later once they do all the math, and if there's any extra, you're supposed to get a refund, but that ain't the way it plays out. They can estimate your bill. So let's say your last 2 months were a couple $100 a month. Right, so they can estimate that your new bill is going to be about the same because the weather's pretty much the same. But hypothetically, let's say you just went on vacation and you shut everything down except the bare essentials, so now you're paying for something you didn't even use.
Mm-hmm.
You see what that is?
Well, what people were doing while they were still contesting that whole thing was they were basically signing it. They were writing a check so that they couldn't close their shut their gas off. But the check in the bottom in that note said payment in protest.
Yeah.
And the bank wouldn't give them their money. The amount of money that was on the check still sat there as like an in lieu, so it was never pulled from those people's account to put into the gas company's account.
Ah, I like it.
Yeah. So.
Well. And the whole deal is that you know when they estimated your bill like that, there would be times you might have like a lazy meter reader that just didn't want to walk up there one day and read the meter, so he just threw down an estimate on there, and you got socked for money you didn't even use the electricity, and that's how you got to keep an eye on them, man. I'll say it again, Thomas Jefferson. Price to freedom is eternal vigilance. If you're not paying attention, then you can't complain. It's implied consent. It's okay. I didn't say nothing. That's their loophole. They got it.
Yep.
Yep. We're down to the wire again, guys. Been a fascinating show. Been a lot of fun, too.
A lot of fun.
But you got technologies available to you out there. Showed you about vaporizing fuel. Showed you a bit about how California government's running around there, unelected officials passing things that end up turning out to be laws, and it's going to affect your life. And just because you don't live in California doesn't mean it's not going to affect you the rest, because usually what happens in California, the California emissions standards turned out to be the standards all the way across the doggone United States. And so over here, we got to have catalytic converters on our car. The catalytic converter ain't nothing but a reburner of waste fuel. And so with that said, why are you wasting fuel to begin with? You wouldn't need a doggone catalytic converter. You'd save your money on replacement parts, and you'd save your money on fuel if you just run the doggone thing the way it should be run to begin with. Mm-hmm. Basic physics, basic science. Doggone it, that's it for the show, man. What a depressing point in the day. And Raymond said I suck.
By yourself.
Oh, yeah, okay. I'll go with that. But either way, you heard me sing.
With a white team, you stand out.
You heard me sing, man. That's it. We need teams. We need teams of brilliant individuals out there doing what it is that we've been talking about. So, you guys got anything last to say before we roll up out of here?
Yes, I do.
Go ahead.
I said it before. I'll say it again in a different way. I said, put your brain in gear before you release the clutch on your tongue. That means don't talk about things you don't know anything about. Don't tell Shaziz, me, or Thomas, or anyone, that they're stupid, that's impossible, you can't do that, until you find out they've already done it. That's it. I'm through.
What about you, Thomas?
Oh, yeah, you guys have pretty much said it all, man. That's good.
Well, there we
I'm
go.
I'm good.
There we go. Folks, you've been listening to the Knights of the Roundtable. If you like these podcasts, please do us the honor by passing them around. Let other people hear them. You know, this platform's only as good as the people willing to use it. So, with that said, if you guys believe in what it is we're trying to do, start your own networks. I'll help you promote them. I'll help you get your radio show up and going. I'll even help you out with whatever software I can give you or whatever. I don't care. As long as you're out there trying to do something beneficial towards the communities out there and trying to make this world a better place, you got to point out the stupidity and the lack of common sense, the sheer ignorance that the way that the system's being run. If you're not going to point it out, if you're just going to sit around and complain about how terrible things are and be out there protesting with your wooden stick and paper sign saying save the trees, then you're just part of the problem. You know, and I'm sorry to say that, but that's the truth.
I got one more thing I'd like to say.
Yeah, go ahead.
People out there listening, Shazoo's been talking a lot of stuff for quite a long time now, but today he just proved the point that he's been making all along. He proved it. When he sings solo by himself, he sucks. Asking is for people to help. Now he proved with help he can sing. Yeah. I mean, the man it's almost like an angel. It's like a siren song. It's calling the people to help. And that's what he's been doing all this time. Get off your butt and do something.
One man
yourself, you suck.
One man don't make a band, and one man can't build a house like a whole team could do, man.
Exactly.
That's it.
Exactly.
All right. Well, we gotta go, guys. We're running over. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for the Knights of the Round Table, and thanks for everybody out there listening. Peace and love. Stay tuned. We'll see you next go.
Man, sorry. What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice.
And how'd you get that, eh?
By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma, which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh! How'd you do?
How'd you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
Well, that's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What? I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings.
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
I mean, if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Camelot.
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 It's only a model.
Shh.
Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot!
We're knights of the round table, three dots where we're able. We'll routine to call a scene, to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table, our shows are for mid-table. The many times we give and rhyme that are quite unsingable. We're all so mad in Camelot, we sing from the dire Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
No, on second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot. It is a silly place.
Right.
Ho, ho, ho! Tu survives the turtle! Always looking to save the turtle and the night's